Well, good day, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and you gators and grannies, to this Sunday's edition of The Big Puzzle. My name is Barry Prince, and I'm coming to you live from my kitchen here in northern British Columbia. I'm broadcasting through the facilities of ShakeAndWakeRadio.com, and I'm being simulcast on the Truth Be Told Radio Networks. Welcome to the show. As always, guys, I like to start the show off with a little plug for the stations. I know tough times are getting tough and getting tougher, but like I say many, many times, if you can afford a coffee once a month for the station, we magnify that times 50 people, and it sure helped taking care of some of the costs they incur and bringing these programs to you. I also like to start my show thanking my producer, because I always manage to forget to do it at the end. Thanks for what you do for me every week, Steve. It's much, much appreciated. Anybody that's listened to my shows over the years, very, very familiar with a man I call the Duracell Bunny, because most days it's really good because I get Roger going, I can't stop him. And like I was telling Roger before we went on the air here, I had a big lunch today and I feel like going to sleep right now. So it's a good thing Roger's in, because if I push the right buttons, I might just get him to talk for 20 minutes and I can take the siesta. Roger, always good to have you in, my friend, and welcome back.
I don't know, Barry. It might not have been the right day to do that, because I've been looking at the news and I've been looking, you know, online and the whole nine yards, and there isn't much going on, so I don't have much to talk about today.
Yeah, it's kind of, the whole world's just kind of gone to sleep. There's nothing really going on anymore, is there, Roger? It's kind of almost upsetting. I mean, it's like we're looking for another disaster and nothing's going on, so maybe this week. Maybe this week we'll have some. The Cascadia is doing all kinds of weird stuff right now. You're probably aware of that. Very, very, very weird stuff, Roger. Not going to say it's going to move, but everybody that's watching it's going, uh-oh, we're in trouble. But anyways, outside of that, we're not here to talk about that today, I don't think, unless you want to talk about that. But we're here to talk about what's going on in your great country, because I'm up here in the great white north, and you're way down there someplace in the Ozarks. So what's going on in the Ozarks?
There are those who believe that it will be the motion of the earth that will cause the biggest catastrophes to humanity, whether it is the West Coast sliding, or whether it is a supervolcano going off in the western part of the United States. And there are a few others across the planet. But if you stop to consider that either one of these could be a catastrophe that would literally be responsible for millions of deaths in a very, very short period of time, it's not something you ignore. It's something you keep an eye on.
Well, I follow it all the time. I listen to Mary Greenlee, and I listen to all BP Earthwatch and Emergency Management. So I'm listening to them all, Roger, right now. So they're all a little bit upset about the sequences we're seeing in geological events and what it could possibly mean.
Yep.
You know, a disaster on the Cascadia subduction zone, a major movement there, Roger, would be the biggest disaster that the human race has ever experienced in our recorded history, period. And that's just one of many, many right now. That's just one of many that are on the tipping point right now. But I want to stop. You always have stuff to talk about going on down there with Joe Bob and the United States of America. What's your biggest pet peeve this week with what's going on? Because I've seen some pretty crazy stuff going on down there.
Well, since I talked to you last, I've done two of my shows, and I always enjoy coming onto your show because it allows me to put the pieces together from several shows to, get enough information to keep your audience pretty much glued to the screen. I would tell you that the show I did this week, the title is Witness America's Destruction. No, I'm not joking. The show I did last week, the title was America in Name Only. So, well, I don't know. Maybe I've got a little bit to talk about. The problem here is what most people don't understand, is that every country out there, and there isn't one that exists where it doesn't happen at some time, there's not a catastrophe. It doesn't happen that at some time there's not some tyranny. It doesn't happen at some time that there isn't an economic issue. It doesn't happen at some time that there isn't a social uprising. All of these things happen at one time or another in just about every country across the planet, unless you're talking in countries that's so small you could walk across it in 10 minutes. But what we're looking at in the United States, and you've heard me say this, and your audience has probably heard me say this before, so let me repeat it to set the stage. At the end of World War II, there was an elitist caste that stated they needed to bring in global governance. They truly believe that the salvation of humanity is two things. One, keep the population down to a point where it is controllable. And two, keep the entire population of the globe under a single governance so that everything can be controlled. They did this. They sat down and they decided this right after World War II. But at that time, they realized that the cowboys of the world were able to give them something that they needed. They needed a foothold across the planet. They needed a massive amount of resources, and they needed a political voice. And all of these could be gotten over time via the cowboys of the world. As soon as they milked us dry, and what do I mean by that? During World War II, the United States alone, some would say, and there are actually articles that do say this, outproduced every other nation on the planet combined during World War II. In the height of World War II. So they knew the economic engine we had. They knew it for a fact. They knew the political clout we had. They knew it for a fact. They knew the global reach we had. They knew it for a fact. So America had to be bled dry of everything they could get from her, and then she had to be brought to her knees. Why? You cannot have global governance if the cowboys of the world are standing up and talking. Not going to. I'm really getting a lot of background noise. You cannot do it if the cowboys are left standing. So, and this is up to this point, I've said this several times on your show. And so we have seen since the late or early 1950s all the way up until today that bleeding process. We've seen over a period of 70 years plus. Slowly but surely, our rights have been taken away just a little bit at a time. If you have a catastrophe and you remove 80 to 90% of a population's rights or liberties in order to make that catastrophe go away, then you tell them they're going to get it all back. They never get it all back. They may get 95% back. And everybody says, well, that's not bad because, geez, everything you took away to make this catastrophe go away, we were really, really suffering. And now it seems like it's just about normal again. Try doing that with a bunch of catastrophes, a bunch of issues over a period of 60, 70, 80 years, where each time you have a catastrophe, you lose a little bit more. What do you have? You have exactly what we have today. You have a country. When we look in the mirror, we don't see the America of 70 years ago. This isn't the America I grew up in. It's not the America anybody listening to this show who is an American grew up in. You all know this. It isn't. But it didn't happen yesterday. It happened over 100 or 1,000 different issues. In each one, you lost 1 or 2 or 3% of what are our perceived liberties. But you got used to that, okay, because it was just a little bit, okay, and you absorbed that. And over time, the meaning of liberty has totally changed. The meaning of freedom has totally changed. If you look at it today and you define it in the eyes of a 20-year-old, and he's talking to me or you, Barry, and he's telling you what he thinks liberty or freedom is, we're going to look at him and go, where did you get that from? That ain't right. So what do I see today? Why do I say America is being destroyed? The destruction of America. Why did I name a show after that and do an entire hour talking to my audience about that? Because I started this off by telling each and every one of you that are listening right now that every country goes through these issues. They all do. But when's the last time you saw a country going through the destruction of its military, the destruction of its economic system, the destruction of its healthcare system, the destruction of the border and border security, the destruction of, and I could go on and on, the destruction of its supply system, the destruction of, we are looking at least a dozen major catastrophes, each and every one of them in their own right, having the ability to knock a smaller, less developed country to its knees. We're looking at a dozen of them that are all of major proportion. They're all happening simultaneously, and they're not getting better. They're getting worse by the day. Here's a for instance. We have governors all across the country telling Joe Bob, you better not drop Title 42. If all of a sudden we've got 10 times more people crossing that border, and all of a sudden we're finding out that you're continuing to ship them all across the country in the dark of night on planes and trains and buses, and we got no say about it, but Joe Bob's doing nothing about that. Not a damn thing. Okay? We are looking at the price of gas. Where I live, it was $1.40, $1.50 2 years ago. Today, what is it, $4.50? But hey, that's only 8.4% inflation. Anybody who thinks we've got 8.4% inflation is a freaking moron. When the price of a pound of beef goes from $1.52 to $6.40, how the hell is that 8% inflation? It's not. But that's what they're telling you. The government is used to lying to you, and we're used to listening to their lies and accepting them. So today we are looking at a virtual plethora, a cornucopia of disasters all happening simultaneously, and each and every one in their own right has the power or the ability to bring any other country, like I said, a smaller country, a less developed country, to its knees by itself. Look around you. This isn't normal. It isn't natural. And there is no other person on this planet who could sit in the White House right now and be a better tool than Joe Bob. Why do I say that? I'm going to explain that to you, too. Okay? The Russians have a copy of his hard drive. We already know that. Hunter Biden's hard drive. The Chinese have a copy of Hunter Biden's hard drive. We know that. The FBI's got a copy of his hard drive. We know that. The CIA's got a copy of his hard drive. We know that. This absolutely proves unequivocally, along with other issues that aren't even on that hard drive, that the guy sitting in the White House is not only brain impaired, but he is compromised. When the Russians know that the president of what's supposed to be the preeminent nation on the planet is compromised, when the Chinese know that the president of what's supposed to be the preeminent country on the planet is compromised, and our intel agencies and our leading law enforcement agency, the FBI, also know this and can prove it unequivocally, he becomes the best puppet on the planet. And what is his job right now? His job is not to close the border. His job is not to increase the amount of production for oil and gas in the United States, more than just saying he's going to. His job is not to keep parents from being, beat up by the DOJ simply because they don't want their children taught sex classes in kindergarten through third grade. Did you know the White House threatened parents the other day saying, if your kid, your minor child, wants a sex change and you step in their way, you ain't going to do that. We're going to come after you. Are you freaking kidding me? What they just told all American parents is that your only task now is to birth them. From that point on, they belong to us. Look at everything I'm telling you. There is nobody on the planet more suited for the position of the presidency of the United States right now in order to ensure the destruction of America than Joe Biden. Joe Biden will go down in history as the biggest traitor, and he's already the most unpopular president in history. He will go down as an actual traitor to the United States, because everything this guy is doing is putting us in a position of screaming uncle. He is literally destroying this country. And anybody out there who can argue that point, I would like to see you face to face because you're a freaking moron. I can give you 10 at a minimum. I could give you at least 20 situations right now that could be stopped and could be reversed. And each and every one of them are in that cache, making it absolutely a fact that the destruction of America is being choreographed. Never in the history of any nation on this planet have so many catastrophic scenarios been allowed to continue simultaneously. Anyway, that's my opening, Barry. Are you awake?
Was that it? You're going to stop now?
Well,
don't stop, Roger.
How did we get here?
How did we get here? How has this happened in our world, Roger? Well, you kind of talked about it there for a few minutes. It didn't happen overnight.
Hold on a minute.
I don't get a chance to talk.
Hey, Trudeau, why are you asking me, Trudeau? Why are you asking me those questions?
Trudeau.
He's part of the same plan. Don't you think Canada's not going to go the same way we are?
I would actually, you know, Roger, if I was given a choice between Trudeau and Biden, even as bad as Biden is, I would trade you right now because Trudeau is absolutely out of control. And we are in a full-blown fascist dictatorship in Canada right now as we speak, and their power base is growing exponentially. And boy, I'll tell you, are we in a lot of caca. But it doesn't matter where you look in the world right now, Robin, the whole world, or Roger, the whole world is in caca.
Oh, hold on, because you just that's where I was about to pick up. Let's talk about Australia. What? Let's talk about tyranny. Let's talk about
Denmark.
New Zealand. Let's talk about tyranny. Let's talk about Germany. Let's talk about tyranny. Let's talk about the UK. Let's talk about tyranny. Let's talk about Canada. Let's talk about tyranny. Let's talk about America. Let's talk about tyranny. Are you hearing? Are you catching the drift here? I just got done telling you, and this is all about Klaus Schwab. This is all about the WEF, the World Economic Forum. When he tells the world, you will own nothing and you will be happy. When he tells the world that global governance, the new world order, the great reset, the fourth industrial revolution, global governance is here. Why? Because the cowboys that had to be knocked to their knees before global governance could possibly exist on this planet, they can see the goalpost. These people that he works for, that he represents, these so-called elitists, can literally see the finish line. I'm not telling you that it's irreversible. I'm not telling you there's nothing we can do about it. What I am telling you is that a lot of people need to wake up really, really quick. Because if they finish what they started in the United States is merely in the bullseye. We're the one everybody's looking at. Look in your own country. You will see the same things are happening, but they don't get the amount of attention that they get in Canada, in America, in Great Britain, in Germany, because these are countries of prominence. These are countries that people look at. This is what's in the news. How often do you hear something about Albania? You don't. How often do you hear something about Czechoslovakia? You don't. How often do you hear something about Uruguay? You don't. But if you don't think tyranny isn't happening almost at the same level in those countries right now, it is. They're just more used to it than we are. We are looking at America going down on one knee very quickly. And by the time that happens, if a lot of Americans aren't pushing back, the second knee will follow soon. At which point, the Great Reset will have succeeded.
Yeah, they're sure pushing the agendas, aren't they, Roger? I mean, you look at what they're doing. Well, you look at what they're doing with digital currency. We look at what they're doing with the new social credit system. There's documents in Canadian Parliament right now outlining the implementation of the social credit system, the exact same social credit system that China is using in Canada in the next 2 to 3 years. Isn't that cool? We're all going to be like, okay, if you're a good little poopazin, you get all your benefits. If not, you're going to be going somewhere. Go ahead.
What most people really don't understand is, and they're all saying, well, hey, we got Bitcoin and stuff like that. Why worry about a digital currency? Because the digital currency is the precursor to that social setup. It is. Your social status is going to be determined by, believe it or not, your bank. And your bank will control everything that you are allowed to buy, everything you are prohibited from buying, and it will all be done by the fact that everything you do will be tracked. Everything you do, where you spend your money, what you spend it on, how much, what you say on your cell phone to other people, what you look at on the internet, where you go in your car. Smart cars nowadays exist. Most people don't understand that, but they do. Your phone's not the only thing that's tracking you. Your car's also tracking you. And I could go on and on. Your thermostat is tracking you. Okay? Yes, it's all there. It all focuses on one thing. What will you be allowed to purchase and what won't you be allowed to purchase? Digital currency is the main kick to a society totally controlled. It is 1984 happening. It is a world where a communist, well, not even a communist, a dictatorial elitist group of individuals will decide everything and anything you can and can't do. You will own nothing, but you will be happy. Why will you be happy? Well, see, that's the part of it I don't really understand. Because if you tell me that if I don't agree with everything you say, I'm not going to be able to have a dog. If I don't do everything you say, I'm not going to be able to purchase anything above hamburger, as far as meat goes. If I don't do everything you say, I'm not going to be allowed to go to see a movie. If I don't do everything you say, my internet's going to be limited to only what they feel somebody as bad as me should be allowed to see, if it's anything at all. What we are looking at via digital currency is the ultimate and total control of each and every individual and everything that happens in their life if they're allowed to live.
Yeah, and it's not far away, Roger. They're pushing this so hard right now. I can see monumental
changes. It's part of the reset.
Well, of course it is. I can see this all falling into place in the next couple of years. Like you said, if we allow it to go forward, we right now really have to stand up against this. But you know what, Roger? Honestly, I scratch my head every day. Canadians just don't seem to care. I can tell people so you're blue in the face, the dangers our country's in and what's going on and where it's going. And it's just like you're talking to a wall. Unfortunately, I still see about 50% of society like that. But the good news is I see a lot of people starting to pay attention. But we've got to wake up the ones that are just absolutely in the dark right now and got their heads up their butt. Go ahead.
What have I been talking to you about over and over again on every show? You will hear me say this. What is the entire mission statement of the Liberty Beacon Project? Why 14 years ago did I decide that I needed to get my voice out to as many people as possible? I'm sure you're going to recognize this as soon as I say the first word, Barry. The eradication of programmed ignorance. You're asking why so many people out there are not seeing this. Because they watch ABC, they watch CNN, they watch NBC, they watch MSNBC, they watch, and they are tuned into what they are supposed to know. Their ignorance is programmed so deeply that it isn't their government they see as being evil. It is you and I that they see as being evil. They see us as being radicals. They see us as something that needs to be toned down or totally eliminated. They would be happy if we were rounded up and put in concentration camps. They would be ecstatic because then everything would be normal, except on the day when the digital currency came in the door, except on the day when they were told going forward, you will take every vaccine we tell you to take, whether you like it or not, except when. In other words, the maintenance of programmed ignorance in a society is directly proportional to the amount of control you have over that society, especially when society has access to massive levels of media, digital media, internet media, like we do today. I have the ability to step outside of the box and learn things that I'm not being taught, to break out of that programmed ignorance. For most people, especially those who work hard, especially those that are trying to support a family, especially those that know or feel that if they rock the boat, those things aren't going to be as easy. So they want to take the easiest path forward. The easiest path forward is the programmed ignorance. And they will stick with that, and they will even fight and kick to stick with that, because it is what allows them to live the most comfortable life they are aware of up until a certain point. We're about to hit that point. It's called the Great Reset, and it's not a joke.
It's right on the border right now, Roger. I mean, I've watched what's going on around the world right now, and this whole program is just ramping up. And like you said, digital currency, if they get that through, Roger, then we might as well just throw in the towel, because they will have complete control of society. There'll be no black market trades. There'll be no any kind of money being generated that the government won't get their share of. And that's really, I think, the end game here is – they know there's millions and millions and millions of dollars of untaxable money that they're not getting every year, and they want their little piece of the pie. But I think it's a lot deeper than that, too, at the same time. But that's the start. And digital currency will lead to the RFID chip. I believe that'll be a big part of it, where we'll all be mandated to have a little chip in our wrist. And if you don't have that chip, you won't be able to function in society. Where have I heard that before?
I said they'll be able to track you anywhere and everywhere. But let me ask
everything
you a question.
You do.
What is going to push society either totally against this or totally for it? There is one thing that is taking place right now across the planet that is either going to work in their favor or it will backfire on them bigger than they could ever imagine. What would that one thing be?
This vaccine rollout, of course, Roger.
Okay.
In my opinion.
Well, the thing of it is, you're far from stupid, which is why I do your show. This is exactly true. And let's take that a little bit further, because you know how much study I've done on this. You know I've written hundreds upon hundreds of vaccine-related articles. This is a topic I actually know what I'm talking about when I talk about it. Well, there are other topics, but this is probably the one that I focus on more than the rest of them. Why? Because this is the second part of that scenario. The first part of that scenario is total control via digital surveillance and digital money. Total control, economic control, and sociological control. The other thing is keep the population of the planet under 500 million in tune with nature. There are 8 billion of us. Anybody with half a brain knows that if you've got a couple thousand elites who feel that they have the right to literally control the entire planet, 8 billion people, or a little less than that, but we'll say 8 billion because we're rounding up, 8 billion people is far too many. So what we are looking at is you still being forced to – our military still being forced to, our healthcare system still being forced to, our students in college still being forced to take a vaccine, or what they're calling a vaccine, because it isn't. We're also now being told that they have approved the fourth and the fifth and the sixth shot, which is the second, the third, and the fourth booster. We're also being told that they can now give these to five-year-olds. We're also being told by many, many researchers across the planet that this is the most deadly pharmaceutical agent ever given to humanity. Every time you take one, you are basically playing Russian roulette. We're also being told that they knew this, and I published an article about this a couple of days ago. They absolutely knew, and Pfizer admitted to this in one of their documents, that every time you take a COVID-19 vaccine, it literally punches the crap out of your immune system. We have three or four doctors, and I believe I discussed this on your last show, three or four groups of doctors all across the planet discussing the fact that by the time you take your third shot, you probably have VAIDS, which is AIDS that's vaccine-induced. That's why they call it VAIDS. Now, if you stop to listen about what I just said, the first shot knocks you to your system, your immune system to its knees. The second shot keeps it there a little bit longer. The third shot makes it all but go away. Now they're telling you, you may be taking a booster every 4 months going forward because they've already approved the fourth and the fifth shot, which is the second and the third booster, meaning you will have no immune system. There are already studies out showing, and there are researchers and doctors screaming at the top of their lungs, that cancer is up in some cases by over, listen to me, if this doesn't shock you, you're a freaking moron. Cancer in a lot of cases is up by over 2,000%. There is a United States DOD database showing cancers, specific cancers, up by any more, like I believe it's ovarian cancer is up by almost 300%. Cancer of the esophagus is up by almost 800%. We're looking at cancer making a smash hit across any vaccinated country on the planet in the thousands of percentage, meaning 100 times, 10 times, 50 times what it was 2 years ago. What's the only thing that has changed? But how many people know this? And if you truly knew this, would you allow your kid to get this vaccine? Your kid has a 0.002% chance of dying from COVID, which will hit them about the same striking power as the yearly flu does. How many kids actually die from the flu? But yet that vaccine, especially if they take the first, the second, the first booster, the second booster, the third booster, that routine right there is what's either going to cause your child to die of something like myocarditis or destroy their immune system so that they are incapacitated for life or they won't live to be 14, 15, 16 years old because they'll either have cancer or something else they no longer have an immune system to fight off. We are looking at right now, and I've said this on your show before, within the next 5 years, we will see the biggest die-off caused by a single component in the history of mankind. I'm going to take it one step further. I'm going to tell you that within the next 5 years, we're going to see the biggest die-off of any pharmaceutical product in the history of humanity combined. We're going to see literally billions of people dying. But yet, you better get your next booster or you can't go to church. You better get your next booster or you can't go into Wally World and buy some groceries that cost you 10 times more than it did a year ago. You better take your next booster or you can't go to work. And what is that booster doing? It's shortening your life. This is the world we live in.
I was actually listening to Dr. Brindle talk, a doctor up here in Canada, about this issue. He's one of the doctors that's speaking loud against it, Robin, and or Roger. If you haven't seen his video, I'll send it to you after the show's over. But he's talking about exactly what you're talking. He says by the time...
Why would I want to listen to his video if he's saying the same thing I am? I'm joking.
Anyways, Roger, if he says after the fourth shot, you basically... we'll be looking at almost zero of your original immune ability in your body. Almost
after
zero.
The third shot, you may have AIDS. After the fourth shot, no immune system.
You got basically nothing left. So what's going to happen when people get measles? They're going to die.
But most people don't understand.
What's going to happen when they get chickenpox? They're going to
die. What most people don't understand is that things like cancer aren't always necessarily caused by a virus. But having an immune system allows your system to be strong enough that a function like cancer can't even set up shop. You take the immune system away and the strength of your body, your body's ability to confront something like this goes away. So no, I'm not telling you cancer is caused by a virus. What I am telling you is that if you take the guard gate down, the dog's going to run out the front door.
Every one of us has a cancer cell go through our bodies every day of our life, Roger. But as our white blood cells go out there, they find it, they kill it, they have no problem dealing with it.
And what's your white blood cell?
You don't have that ability. Well, of course, it's part of your immune system, Roger. I know that. So you take that away, and that is why we're seeing the incredible rise in cancer. And like you said, it's just going to go through the roof. And now they're talking, like you said, the fourth, the fifth. I mean, they're even talking in Canada about a sixth booster now. Sixth booster. Are you out of your minds, guys?
Well,
we're the crazy ones, Roger.
What you need to do is you need to ensure that in the shortest period of time, you can affect or afflict as many people as possible. It's like this. Let me focus this down on one group, all right? Let's focus this down on the military. Right now, our military and militaries across the planet, including the Russian military and the Ukrainian military, 92% of the Russian military has been vaccinated, okay? 95% of the Ukrainian military has been vaccinated. I think 80% of the U.S. military has been vaccinated. We could go all around the world and find out that a vast majority of these militaries have been vaccinated. What we are seeing, and the database is the only reason we know about this because there were three whistleblowers who went through the entire database and then said, this has to go to the public. These are the people that are telling us that in the military, the massive rise in cancer, the massive rise in heart disease, and I could go on and on. And this is just focused on the military alone. Now you tell these people also that, hey, look, you had fantasies of being a girl. You know what? We'll pay for that to happen. This is what the U.S. Army and the U.S. military is going to do. They're literally now they're woke. They're going to pay for a soldier to go from a guy to a girl. Gee, let me ask you a question. While they're going through all of these operations, so on and so forth, what does that do for their military readiness? It absolutely destroys it. Okay, so now we have side effects going freaking haywire in the military. We have people walking out because they know what these shots are going to do, and they'll say, okay, you gave me a choice. Do this or get out of the military. I'm leaving. So now you've got them leaving, you've got the side effects, you've got the sex changes, you've got the – if you were going to take a nation to its knees, and it doesn't have to be America, it could be any country on the planet with a military. If you're going to take a country to its knees, the first thing you need to do is incapacitate that military so they can't come back and say, we know what you're doing, bang, bang, you're dead. What they are doing is incapacitating militaries across the planet. 92% of the Russian military is vaccinated, 95% of the Ukrainians, over 80% of the Americans. And if you go around the world, you're going to find out that probably the most vaccinated portion of any society, any modern society, is their military. Why? Why are you intentionally destroying your military? Why are you forcing your military basically at gunpoint, and I'm speaking figuratively, not physically, at gunpoint, you either play Russian roulette, you either screw your life up, or we're going to kick you to the curb. You know what? If I was in the military and they told me that, I'd give them the bird as I was walking out the door. But that still helps them to succeed, because now I'm not there ready to push back anymore. This is what's happening. If you focus on the military, you can see what they're trying to do everywhere. But if you want to bring a country like America to its knees, all of the other things I told you that are going on that are working to literally destroy America, the one thing they have to be absolutely sure of is that we don't have a military that's capable of pushing back. And they are destroying the preeminent global military, the United States, as we speak.
Yeah, they've been purging high-level generals out of the military for quite a few years now, Roger, that don't stand or don't go along with the agenda.
They won't.
We know that's going on. Yeah, we know that's going on. So, you know, they do things incrementally, and they do them very slowly, because if they know they made these catastrophic changes in society overnight, society would recognize it, and they'd rebel. But like you said at the beginning of the show, they do this slowly, piece by piece, a little piece here, a little piece there. Society doesn't realize what's really going on. They don't recognize it for what it is, and life just goes on.
Society doesn't understand how dangerous the vaccines are. So when we are told, or most of society is told, that everybody in the military needs to get a vaccine so that they can't pass this around and ruin the military, they believe that. They understand that. And they don't have any pity for the ones who won't take the vaccine and get out, because they don't know the massive vaccine reactions that are happening right now. They don't know about the deaths being caused by this in the military. They don't know the amount of people who actually know how bad this is and they're going to walk away from their military careers. They don't know these things. But this is what's actually happening. It's the programmed ignorance. If I knew for a fact that these vaccines are killing more people today in the hospitals as a result of what they're doing than COVID ever has. Listen to me, people. The people in the hospital that are dying supposedly from COVID, a vast majority of them today are fully vaccinated. Why does that make sense to anybody? The people who are not vaccinated are a very small portion of the people dying. The people fully vaccinated are a vast majority of the people that are dying. But you ain't supposed to know that. There's your programmed ignorance. Did I break the mic? Hello?
Oh, I broke the mic. You know what? I make a habit of muting out when you're talking, Roger, because I create a lot of background noise. So I had my microphone muted there for a second.
I got slightly excited, but I apologize for not having much to say today. I do.
We were kind of worried about that when the show started today, Roger, what we were actually going to talk about, because there isn't much going on. But, boy, I'll tell you, some of the things I see going on in the school systems in the States, especially with the amount of pornographic material that's being discovered in the libraries right across the country, mostly in Democratic states, but everywhere. Parents are going out and looking for this now, Roger, and it's absolutely mind-boggling, some of the stuff that's ended up in the libraries in the schools in the United States of America. Now people are aware of it. It's one of the things I've been following and watching here in the last couple of weeks, some of the groups that are actually standing up. And I'll tell you, it's alarming, Roger. It really is alarming.
Let's go down to DeSantos. I got to tell you something. If Trump doesn't run, I hope the hell DeSantos does. And if Trump does run in 2024, I hope DeSantos is his vice presidential candidate. I'm going to tell you what's going on right now in Florida. The parents and the local parental organizations have gotten together and rejected 41% of the school books for their children. They've rejected almost half of the books that these companies sell to these schools every year. 41% of them, they've been told, nope, Get it out of here. You ain't teaching our kids that. 41%. Stop and think about that. When I saw that number, I stood up and started clapping. I was like, woo, 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 yeah. Okay, I want to live in Florida right now. The only thing is Arkansas isn't all that bad. Arkansas is actually a pretty conservative state. So we're seeing things maybe not as good as Florida, but we're seeing things better than, say, California. Anybody, I've lived in California 3 times in my life. I have. Anybody living in California right now is just an idiot. You really are. Okay? You've got billions of dollars going to homeless people that they brought across the border who are getting more attention, better health care, blah, 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 than you're getting. Okay? Your life has been destroyed because to get a 3-bedroom apartment when I lived there, it would cost probably, I don't know, about $600-700 a month. Now it's like $3,500 a month for the same damn place, okay? And the crime is insane. Even in some of the highest, most swank neighborhoods in some of the muckety-muck cities, you know, like Hollywood, you know, and places like that, there are people getting robbed and getting killed walking out to their cars. Or they're getting robbed walking into a store. And this is in Burbank. This is in Hollywood. This is in San Francisco in the high-priced areas. This is what California has turned into. And you've got a governor that's doubling down. He's now saying, vaccine, 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 vaccine. He's now saying blue, 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 blue. If you don't agree with everything I say, there's no place for you in California. They can't get out of California fast enough. There are hundreds of thousands of people moving out of California every year. The problem here is there isn't enough. It isn't fast enough. And you have literally seen the absolute destruction of the 6th largest economy on the planet. Yeah, California, the 6th largest economy on the planet has literally been destroyed by a blue governor. Intentionally. He's part of the plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's got his ticket at the big party there for sure, Roger. And like you said earlier in the show, they've got to bring our world population down to 500 million. And if that truly is their plan, there's a lot of us that are going to be leaving very, very shortly. And this jibby-jab seems to be a big part of it, in my opinion. Not the whole answer to getting rid of us all, but a good part of it.
There's two mechanisms that can be used to send the herd down quickly. One of them is war. We've got to rule out nuclear war on a big scale. There may be some, you know, theater nukes, you know, nukes that can be used strategically in a small area, battlefield, stuff like that. They've got them that are like 1 or 2 kilotons or whatever. Okay?
Yeah.
But I'm talking about without a massive nuclear exchange, there's only two mechanisms that can be used. That is World War III and this vaccine. World War III doesn't have a snowball's chance in hell of killing as many people as this vaccine does. Why do I say that? There have been pandemics. There have been bad flu seasons. There have been – this has gone across the globe year after year after year. Can anybody here remember the entire globe – being locked down and you being forced to take one vaccine after another, after another, after another, after another, after another, after another, and them even coming up to tell you this could be with us for the rest of our lives for something that has a knockdown power of the flu. So if you stop to consider what I just said, there has been a massive global inoculation program. We are seeing a vast, vast number of humanity that has been vaccinated. You can't do that even with World War III. Most of Africa won't be in on it. Most of South America, it won't even touch. Okay? And if things go the way they usually go, America and Canada might not get touched. The entire Western Hemisphere might be pretty much untouched. We may be sending people somewhere else to fight. And that's the way it usually is. But if you've got a vaccine that you have scared the global population into taking not just once, but over and over and over and over again, if you have been able to do that, and we know for a fact that after the third one, you could end up with AIDS, and after the fourth one, you don't have a snowball's chance in hell of even having a, I don't know, an immune system. Tell me any mechanism on the planet that would have the ability to be as effective in genocide other than one that is willingly being taken by a vast majority of the population, because you program them with ignorance so deep, they're thinking they're honestly doing something good. We are looking at as many as 4 billion to 5 billion out of the 8 billion of us before they're done having been fully vaccinated. Stop and think about that. If each and every one of them ends up without having any type of an immune system, I did say fully vaccinated, which means at least 3 shots, maybe 4, okay? If we're looking, you're looking at least 2.5 to 4 billion people dying.
So a vaccinated person having intimate contact with an unvaccinated person, is that unvaccinated person going to be basically vaccinated, Roger, because of the exchange of body fluids?
It's not quite that simple. What's causing this is there's a component in the vaccine that basically does the same thing that you would get if you actually had the virus. The only thing here is that component contains 3 things. It contains SARS, which you would expect in a vaccine. This is SARS-CoV-2, supposedly. So you would expect to have, you know, the component of SARS in your vaccine. Okay? This also contains MERS, and it also contains HIV. There is actual proof from doctors who have done the analysis stating beyond a shadow of a doubt that this component that is in the vaccine contains AIDS, HIV, MERS, and SARS. So can it be transmitted if you're that intimate and you exchange bodily fluids? I would imagine it definitely could.
But we don't know for sure. What is MERS, Roger?
It's another, and I don't have the scientific name, but it is just like SARS. It is another virus. So what they have is the construct for MERS, the construct for SARS, and the construct for HIV. And they're all within this component that this vaccine is constructed by.
How many people have been vaccinated so far around the world, Roger, that you know of? Or you got figures on that?
I don't have absolute figures, but I have been told it could be, for at least the first 2 shots, it could be as many as 2 billion at this point. And they're not stopping. As a matter of fact, in a lot of places, they're ramping it up.
They're not. Well, they seem to be. And, you know, how do they keep this information away from the public? I don't know, Roger, especially with the Pfizer dumps, with all the information that's come out in the last 2 months, all the data we're starting to see, the data we're seeing from the insurance agencies. I mean, it's just overwhelming that they can continue to keep this from the public, and the public isn't aware of the danger.
The Pfizer dumps have stated beyond a shadow of a doubt there are over 1,200 major
adverse
side effects and an association with 2,000 other diseases. In other words, this was never designed to help you with anything. It was designed to give you something. And I said that a year ago on your show. This was never designed to cure anything. It was designed to give you something. You remember over a year ago I said that on your show.
Yeah, well, you've read the playbook and you understand where they're going. And it's really easy to read the playbook when you understand what these people are all about, Roger, and what their end game is. And you're well aware of it, as well as a lot of our listeners are aware of the end game. But it's really good to get you in here and kind of cross the T's and dot the I's for us. You always do that. So it's great having you. And we got about 2 minutes left, bud. And I'll have to say goodbye again, but we'll have you back in again in 2 weeks.
Let me say real quick then, if you want to talk about these things in Facebook, you can't do it. You want to talk about these things on Twitter, you can't do it. Unless Musk buys it, we'll see. If you want to do this on YouTube, you can't do it. And Instagram, you can't do it. Where can you do it? Go to tlbtalk.com. It is a relatively new social media platform. And the only thing we don't allow you to do is anything that is illegal and get us shut down. If it's not illegal and you feel it's important and you feel you need to discuss it, you can discuss it. So what am I doing here? I'm doing exactly what I would be doing if I was in TLB Talk right now. I'm giving you people information. But there's one thing everybody here needs to totally understand. Once you know something, it becomes incumbent upon you to teach it. Once you learn it, it becomes incumbent upon you to teach it.
Say, Roger.
If you know something as bad as what I'm telling people and you don't tell somebody, you're as guilty as the tyrants you rail against. If you know, you must teach.
Say, Roger.
That's a rule.
Yes.
You do understand that it is illegal to question the Holocaust in the UK.
It is now. Yep.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
I did do that. Well, I learned something today. There you go, Steve. Roger, I got to thank you for coming in, bud. Always a pleasure. And like I said, we'll have you back in again a couple of weeks, and I'm sure you'll have a lot more good stuff to talk about. You've really made my day today. Now I can just go hide in my cave.
Well, I told you I didn't have much to say, and I'm sorry.
Thanks for bringing the information forward, Roger. It's critical that people hear it. I'll have you back, like I said, in 2 weeks from now.
All right. Thank you, and thank you for the platform, Barry. It's always a pleasure. Not the fact, not what we talk about, but the fact that I can interact with my friends, you and Steve both.
Okay, Roger, we'll talk to you again, like I said, 2 weeks from now.
Yep.
Look forward to it. Okay, I'll be back, guys, in about 4 minutes with Mr. Wayne Peters, and he's got lots to talk about as to what's going on in our great country of Canada right now. Back in 4 minutes.
You know you want it, but can you afford to pay the price? We'll be right back.
welcome back, second hour, folks, and thanks, Roger, for coming in again. Always a pleasure. One of the people I really enjoy talking to, and I haven't had him on now for about a month, is Wayne Peters. So Wayne was good enough to join me today. We'll have a little conversation about some of the going-ons in Canada and what's going on with his groups, Essex Over Fear, and what's up, Canada? How are you doing, Wayne? Always good to have you back in.
You know, I'd like to say I was, you know, taking a nice, good, you know, long weekend off, but, you know, here I am, you know, like the rest of us, working on a Easter Sunday, but ever grateful for the opportunity to still be doing what we do and love to do and make a difference every day that we possibly can, right?
You know, I always maintain, Wayne, if I reach one person during the course of a radio show and influence one person in their thinking, then it's a good day for me. If I influence two people, that's even better. But we can't stop talking, that's for sure. And I thought about taking the day off. I thought about phoning in today and saying, you know, we're going to have Easter dinner. Could have made up a real good, easy excuse and put the show off. But I don't know. I'm compelled to talk as much as I can because I know we ain't got that much time left to really get Canadians in gear and activated against what we see going on in this country, Wayne. I think we're really getting into some very dangerous times right now with some of the legislation the government's passed, especially here, or attempting to pass right now in Parliament. Scary, some of it.
You know, there's so many different things that are coming at us from every different direction, every different part of our lives. You kind of throwing me off my game here a little bit because you always start off with the pet peeve of the week, and I just put so much thought into that today that you haven't even
Darn. Wayne, what's your pet peeve of the week? Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
Oh, that's too funny. Rewind, replay, right?
Okay, let's start. Let's start with your pet peeve because I know that would really throw you for a loop if we didn't do that. What is your pet peeve? And then we got a million other things we could talk about. Go ahead.
Eggs. My pet peeve of the week is eggs. Eggs and bacon.
Okay.
How am I going to learn to live without eggs and bacon? Because the way things are going, I'm going to have to give them all up real, real soon. I'm pretty partial and fond of my eggs and bacon.
Well, why are you going to have to now tell people why you're going to have to give up your eggs and bacon?
Well, because this magical new super weapon that the cabal has learned to wield against us in their bioweapons and their gain-of-function researchers and all of these things. We've looked at all of these things like they were only intended to harm us. But meanwhile, we're not really noticing as millions of birds, millions of chickens are being slaughtered and culled across Canada and now North America under a new bug pandemic virus that is taking the chickens. And in some states, they are already banning the sale of live chicks and fertilized eggs to contain this new parasite or bug or whatever thing it is. And we're going to be digging into a lot of that over the next week or two of my shows. But that's kind of what's really bugging me right now is this is happening. It's real. And people are so distracted and busy in chasing Pierre Poilievre for prime minister when we're 3 years away from an election yet, and we're going to be starving to death by fall.
Wait, Pierre's the new savior of Canada, man. What's wrong with you? Wayne, come on, man. Haven't you seen some of the YouTube videos and what he's doing, man? I mean, he's got 5,000 people coming out to listen to him. Come on, you know, man. Give the guy a break.
Everyone is so desperate that they're treating this leadership race like it's the next federal election.
Yep.
You know? Yep. And this is disturbing to me when all of this other chaos and things that are going around happening to us real time, real world, are not being noticed or not being covered by legacy or mainstream media. And this leadership race, okay, give it 5 minutes, give it your vote and be done with it because it's not going to change anything over the next 3 years. I'm not saying we don't need to be prepared or people shouldn't be prepared for the next election cycle, but jeepers, how many times are we going to bang our heads against the wall and expect something different to happen just because there's a different face riding the same unicorn doesn't mean the unicorn is going to change.
Yeah, well, how much damage is going to be done in the next 2.5 years now that our country is being run by Jagmeet Singh and Justin Trudeau? Wayne. That is a scenario that scares the heck out of me, buddy. They're unstoppable.
And you know, the reason why that should be so terrifying to people is what is coming almost immediately. And this takes, again, the distraction of Pierre and what potentially he might do in the next election, because I don't think we're ever going to get there. With these guys having the power that they have right now and the push that is coming, the manufactured destabilization, the manufactured food crisis, the manufactured housing crisis, the financial crisis is absolutely real. That is going to bite people in astronomical ways. The shift that is happening, people don't realize where it's going. It might be a little bit of inflation today, tomorrow, gas prices going up. These are the things that are getting our attention, but we're not seeing why this is happening. Mm. And what's the result?
To save the planet, Wayne. Come on. That's what Trudeau's telling us. He wants to save the world. He's worried about your future generations having a planet to live on. So he's got to put the carbon tax up another 25%. Maybe in 4 months we might have to put up another 25% because we seem to be losing the battle saving the environment, Wayne. So, but don't worry about it. We know what we're doing.
All of these things going up, all of these taxes, all of this inflation, all of these things are for them to attempt to service the debt load off of the money that they are printing, which is an absolute impossibility. And the debt load is going up exponentially by the minute. All of these increases in their theft from the population are not going to even come close to satisfying that monster, that beast, because they've done this intentionally. This is what I believe the manufactured war in Ukraine was designed to do. This is what destroys our fiat currency. Russia and China have gone to solid gold-backed currency. They own all of the manufacturing in the world. Anybody that wants a good or a product or a service is not going to choose our side or Joe Biden, Hong Kong Biden's side. They're going to choose to do business with China and Russia and their gold-backed currency. And our oil-backed fiat currency is going to go the way of the dodo bird. And when that starts to happen, it is going to happen ridiculously quick.
It's happening already, is it not, Wayne?
It is. It absolutely is. Just in 3 days, going to the market here, I've seen some of the same products not just increase but jump twice in the last 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, I'm seeing some crazy changes too, Wayne. I went to the grocery store the other day, spent $100 and had 2 bags of groceries. $100 and 2 bags of groceries. I mean, it's getting to a point soon that what the people really on fixed incomes, people that are just barely squeaking by as of, say, 4 months ago, are really going to start to feel the effects of this, Wayne. And now we got the interest rates going up again. You heard that, of course. What kind of impact do you think that's going to have, Wayne?
None of this is going to make it any easier for us, because the rate of inflation and the rate of cost increase due to the manufactured supply chain crisis, because supply and demand dictates price, the cost of doing physical business is being crushed. They want us all to move out of the rural areas into the cities so that they can eliminate the use of trucking to and fuel, so we don't commute. We don't have to go far for our groceries. We can all get our groceries via a subway or these kinds of things. This is what it's all designed to do, is to crush us and squeeze us into the places where we can mass congregate just for the bare basics of survival.
Right. Venezuela, here we come.
Absolutely.
We're almost identical scenario played out in that country, Wayne. And we know they were one of the richest countries in the world, and look at them now. Took 10 years to do it.
You know, with not just Venezuela, it's the same principles that are being engaged here is what they've used to divide almost every country that we've seen a war in the last 50 years. It's the same playbook. And all of these things, these Pierre distractions and these other things, are going to be absolutely irrelevant. Nobody's going to care when they can't feed their kids.
Yeah. Well, fuel, you know, Wayne, watch it. I bet you by June or July, we're going to see $3 a liter for gas prices in Canada. And boy, if it gets to that point, which I believe it's going to, our prices are just going to go crazy because everything is based on fuel. Everything that we do in our society is either moved or produced with the use of fossil fuels. Can't take that away and expect massive, massive depression and massive inflation, which I think is just around the corner. I think we're going to see hyperinflation. We look at all the food shortages they're talking about around the world. Now these chickens, what is that? That's killing the chickens. That's the swine flu, isn't it?
Avian influenza is what they're calling it. You know, and the sickening part of this is all of these things can so easily be eradicated. There is no need for these things. They don't make a poison unless they've got a cure. The cures for all of these things has been around for a very long time. But anybody that talks about it or tries to engage in that, it instantly becomes a target and it gets taken out. You know, it's very similar along the nature of the lines of David Menzies did a story with a guy the other day in Ontario who's using straight up ammonia as a fuel at a cost of 25 cents a liter that he can produce at home with zero emissions, no loss in power, mileage, yada, yada, yada. And these are the kinds of things our government buries, and they have done the exact same thing. I know exactly what is going on with this avian flu, so-called flu, and they're going to be coming for the pork next, and they've already been dabbling in planting the seeds with BSE in the cattle. This is taking away our food chain system. They are going to make sure that we can't even get eggs. We already know we're not going to get any support as far as for corn or wheat or rice in the world because this is probably stuff that I've learned in between you and I speaking last. China owns lock, stock, and barrel, 70% of the world's corn, 60% of the rice, and I think 50% of the wheat. And 100% of the fertilizer. So anybody that wants to try and grow for the rest of the 30-40% of the world's population is going to be shit out of luck.
Wow.
And when we look at what is dependent on these corns and rice and wheat, it's our livestock. It's even our pet foods, not just us. So that's going to create an incredible strain on whatever's left. And why are we experiencing all of these difficulties? Because they want to play super virtue signaling star in the Ukraine to cover their own corruption and what they're getting busted with as far as for crimes against humanity, war crimes in all of the lab research and all of the things that have been happening over there, including the genocide that has been initiated since 2014 at the hands of our Western governments. This is all the cover up for that. So they're willing to murder millions of us to cover up their own crime spree. This is what we're up to.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, 9/11 is an example of that. Even though they only killed 3,000 people, I don't think it would make a difference. It was 3,000 or 300,000 or 3 million people. It doesn't matter to them as long as the agenda is pushed forward. They're willing to kill as many people as it takes to do that, Wayne. Those are the kind of people we're dealing with, unfortunately.
Justifiable collateral. To them, it's math. It's all about numbers. They don't care what the cost versus expense or the value ratio is if it forwards their agenda for the greater good in their mindset. We are literally up against a clone army of psychopaths.
Time to head to my cave, Wayne.
You know...
or Mexico. I want to get the hell out of here, but I can't because I got to stay here and fight for my daughter and my grandchildren. Go ahead.
We are literally facing an extinction level event for the human species. And at the end of the day, if we're true believers, and this is where all of those things that I've gone on about here for the last 15 minutes are all as evil and diabolical as they are, there's still an opportunity for us. Because here's the thing. Evil has been running rampant on this planet for a very, very long time. And people don't learn the lesson until the price they pay is high enough. People are paying a high enough price that they are finally awakening to the evil. And they are standing up in strength in mass all over the world. You know, and I cannot – somebody sent me a little video this morning, and it was 30 seconds, and it completely changed my outlook of things on the day. And it was so accurate and correct and reflective. And these are the things that kind of changed what my pet peeve was going to be about and those kinds of things. And I didn't want to spend my whole hour on you on the doom and gloom because that would be just too easy to do. And that's what we hear every single day. But to come to the same understanding that we're all in this together, whether we end up, you know, it doesn't matter who we are or where we came from. We are literally in this together as a species. So when I pray, and this is going to be kind of personal, I don't talk about this kind of stuff very often, but some of the things that I pray for are strength and wisdom and discernment. So somebody sent me this little video today, and it kind of went along the lines of those kinds of things. It says they asked for God for strength, and God gave them difficulties. They asked God to make them strong, so they gave them challenges. They asked for wisdom, so God gave them problems to solve. They asked for courage, so God gave them dangers to overcome. They prayed for love, and God gave them troubled people to help. All my prayers have been answered.
Amen.
Right. And this is how we can we have this divine power within us. And a lot of times we talk about these divine interventions, things that happen because we prayed for a miracle. We forget and we get lost in the sorrow and the misery, and we forget about divine manifestation. Equally as powerful.
Yeah, it's not in our hands, is it, Wayne? The end game is already known and decided and planned out by a much higher power than us, and we just have to go along in faith and take it for what it is, man. We are in very, very crazy times right now, but I see biblical prophecy unfolding in front of our eyes like I've never seen before, ever.
What good, what does it serve? Who does it serve for us to get lost in misery and despair in the light of all of those things? Our sense of urgency comes from our own sense of what the timeline of things should be for God to win. When we live in this state of fear, this perpetual state of fear, that comes from our own sense, our own lack of surrender and knowledge and acceptance of the higher power, that at the end of the day, God wins regardless of what our timeline wish is. It's not ours to do. So these are the things that if once we understand that and surrender to this is God's timeline, and anything that we experience here is only temporary in the grand scheme of things. So who we serve, our mortal being or our eternal divine being, this is the place in our eternal existence where we're actually gambling. Are we going to bet our eternal existence for what we're doing in a short time frame on earth? When we accept that and we start to answer that higher calling, that higher self, that higher soul, and realize that this is only temporary, no matter what they can do to us, it's only temporary and it's only in the flesh. They have no power over our souls. When we can accept that, it becomes a whole lot easier to move forward and share light and hope and ideas and inspiration and thoughts that actually empower people, that don't cause them to sink into a deeper hole. And that's kind of was a huge affirmation for me this morning when I read that little video as to the path that I'm on is the right path.
It's a natural thing to get really depressed about what we see going on in our world, and when that happens, it's like the devil's got his hands into your soul, and he's trying to pull you in his direction. And I recognize that for what it is. If anybody that isn't a little bit, I won't use the word depressed. I would use the word terrified for the unsaved. We'll say. at this point in history, where our planet's going, where our civilization's going. I think it's only natural to be a little bit scared, but I recognize that for what it is. And when that happens, Wayne, I just ask the Lord to take the devil off my shoulder, and all of a sudden that's gone. It disappears in the blink of an eye. So
we have to get a little bit better accepting the things we cannot change and changing the things we can, and the discernment to know the difference, right?
Yeah, we're trying to save the world, but that's not our job, buddy.
No, our job is only to
spread the word,
a message, and to provide hope and comfort where we can. That's really it. That's all that we're responsible for, is how we govern ourselves in this life and the state of grace that we live by. That's what will determine. You know, that's the gamble that we're taking. We're given this opportunity here to do those things, and whichever side of the fence the acorn falls and stays and grows and plants a root on, they can be lost to all of the devices that are possible. And some of them are incredibly enticing and magical and exciting and all of those things. But at the end of the day, what are you serving and who are you serving? That's the bottom line, right?
Yeah, it's your eternity that you can't be gambling with, Wayne. And I'm not going to gamble with mine, even though I know I'm not a perfect person. I do start my day with prayer every morning, and I simply ask Him for strength, wisdom, and courage, because I know I'm going to need all three going forward, especially the courage, because we are going to be persecuted. We know that. We already see the levels of persecution against Christians in Canada and around the world, and we know that's only going to get better. So I'm prepared for that.
Here's the thing. People can only figure out, they can only learn if they have courage. Is the only way that opportunity presents is if you face danger. So if you're hiding in a comfort in a cave, in your basement, in your home, you'll never know the courage that you have because you're not facing any danger. Right? These are the things that we deny ourselves the opportunity to find, to see if we have the courage, to see if we have the wisdom to do these things. If you don't put yourself in a position to experience them, you don't know if they exist.
Well, I believe we're all going to be tested real, real soon here, Wayne, if we're not being tested already. I believe everything the Bible tells me about this particular time in history. I'm not an expert, and I'm not an expert by any shape or form, but I kind of looked at the timelines that Revelations is laid down, and John the Baptist and Peter and the things they all wrote about this particular time in our history. And we seem to be on a very distinct timeline. And the end, He wins. That's all we got to know. In the end, God is going to win. But I believe the devil's going to run crazy on this planet for a couple more years, maybe before everything is fixed again, period. I'll say that.
It's taken us thousands of years to get here, and the Earth will continue to spin thousands of years after you and I are gone from this place. And at that point, they're probably will be long forgotten in the dust of time. And these are the things that we don't necessarily, we tend to think that we're the most important thing in the world, in the universe, and we are so minuscule in the grand scheme of things.
Well, you know, they say the Earth and our galaxy is like a speck of dirt on a 50,000 or 60,000 mile beach in comparison to what's out there, Wayne. And people say to you all the time, Barry, do you believe in UFOs? Well, I've never seen one, and I've never met one yet. But to say that in the depths and the expansion of space, which we can't even begin to see the end, we have no idea where it starts or how it ends, that there isn't other forms of intelligent life out there. I think, honestly, without sounding sacrilegious, I think God probably has 3 or 4 more, maybe 500 or 600 more species out there. Why wouldn't he? I mean, space is an awfully big place, and it'd be awfully empty without other forms of life, wouldn't it, Wayne? So that's how I answer that question.
to draw finite lines and conclusions and those kinds of things are a shining example of our own arrogance and highlighting our own ignorance. We still discover new species, creatures, and animals on this planet every single day.
And
we profess to know what God created in the heavens and in the earth. We are so arrogant when it comes to that kind of stuff. As a species, I mean.
Try and wrap your mind around. Try to wrap your mind around infinity, Wayne. Just try and wrap your mind around that. How do you explain infinity? Somebody explain that to me.
The desire and need for somebody to try to explain that is, again, a form of hubris and ego. They want to prove that they know everything or they know more than what the divine universe has put together. Again, an impossible challenge and another sign of ego and hubris for those kinds of people. You know, and this is the flaw in all of the ointment of all of the discussion and the narrative around all of the assaults on humanity that have been ongoing, not just now, but lately in extremity, with the follow the science, the made up science. We can debate all of those things, you know, but at the end of the day, science is never ever defined, not ever, ever, ever. That is in the nature. That's what makes it science, is it must be questioned because it is always forever evolving, you know, and we see these kinds of things, and because there's money to be made, they can't allow these kinds of things. You look at Darwin's theory of evolution, when people first came to North America. Every single year, all of these things that we're told are concrete facts. That's science. Follow the science. Believe the science, or else. That's the absurdity right there.
I know. I sit sometimes, I'll lay on the ground out in the field and I'll look up in the stars, and I'm looking at stars that are, some of them are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of light years away. And it just, you know, that's just what we can see with our naked eye, man. And beyond that, there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of others that are hundreds of millions of light years away. It boggles my mind when I look at the galaxies and the Milky Way, and what we can see beyond that is just continuing forever. It's all my life I got. How does the human mind even begin to explain infinity? Well, we can't, and we never will.
And you don't have to go too far before there'll be somebody who will be willing to try and tell you that they can. You know, and then it's not unlikely that person, that if you challenge them or ask them a question or challenge or told them to define it or to explain something else, that they would call you a conspiracy theorist or a scammer or a fraud or any one of those things. Because when people don't have an argument, the first thing they resort to is abuse.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Right. So the instant you reach that point, you know that they've already lost the argument.
But they think they're winning.
They think they're winning because there'll be somebody else that they can intellectually intimidate sooner or later. It's a horrible analogy, but when I was growing up, in my young manly years, and we were doing, you know, the thing, chasing girls and all of those things, this one buddy of mine, he was so horribly, horribly homely and not a good looking fella. And he was, there was nobody that.
We lost you.
Kind of funny because his theory was that if he only was successful 1% of the time, that just meant he had to ask 100 girls on a date before he'd get that one. So the sooner he got to it, the quicker he was going to get his date. And he always had dates. But he.
Well, you just gotta look. You just gotta look for the most homely girl in the school, and you won't have a problem.
The moral of the story is, you know, next there's always somebody else, and when people immediately resort to those kinds of lowbrow exchanges, I've gained the discernment to just smile and nod and walk away and pray for them and move on to the next person that is more likely to have a valuable communication or exchange with.
There's this guy on the internet. I can't remember his name, Wayne, but he's got no arms or legs, and he's done hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of inspirational speaking. You might know who I'm talking about. I just can't put a name on him right now, but I've watched some of his videos, and boy, if a person ever had a reason to be down and despaired in your life, being born without arms and legs, he is one of the most incredible people I've ever watched talk in my life. It just goes to show you that whatever your disabilities, whatever your setbacks in life are, they can be overcome, and he is just a shining example of that. I'll have to give you his name and send you some of his videos, because it just completely inspired me to see this guy doing what he's doing, speaking to hundreds of thousands of people and changing people's lives. And he was born with a disability that most of us would never be able to overcome in our lives. So I'll send you some videos from him. You'll love watching him. I can't think of his name right now.
That's the thing that we tend to not breathe, and there is inspiration and beauty and enlightenment and talent all over the place, but we become so fixated on looking at the negative that we don't always see those kinds of things. And our emotions and our state of well-being is something that, although we don't necessarily get to decide the environmental impacts, we are still responsible for what we surround ourselves with, what we ingest, what we eat is no less important than what we surround our mental state with, right? If that makes sense. What we take in, not just physically as far as food and sustenance, what we take in intellectually, mentally, as far as for stimulation, information, those kinds of things, all have equally as important an impact. So there's an environmental responsibility that we as individuals have to have the self-discipline to govern ourselves sometimes. You know, when you've been in the water too long, you know instinctually when it's time to get out. But this is the thing that we kind of don't have or have to learn sometimes, better self-discipline for that when it comes to the intellectual side of things. And when it starts to have a negative effect or a toxic effect, that's not progress.
Have you been watching much of the reports coming out about the jabs lately, Wayne? Have you been following much of the information coming out?
Of course.
In the last couple of weeks?
Yes.
I'm stuck for a doctor's name here. I had it. One I watched here just this week about some of the reports coming out, just absolutely it astounded me, some of the information coming forward. The one thing that I've been really kind of looking into, and I did a little research myself, was the reports coming out from insurance agencies. We have seen, well, you probably know this, a 40% increase in deaths in 1 year, reported by the Insurance Agencies Association of North America. And what that's doing, Wayne, it's going to bankrupt these companies. They're all basing themselves on an average, over the last 15 years, how many people normally die in a normal calendar year. Well, they've seen a 40% increase. I'm sure you're aware of that information.
I'm aware of that report. That's just the beginning.
Let's talk about that for a few minutes, if you don't mind.
Sure. So this is kind of a bit of a gear switch to some of the stuff that we've been working extremely in depth on with the Ethics Over Fear Task Group. We've literally had a team of a half a dozen ladies that now for the last 5 months have been tracking sudden and unexplained deaths in Canada. And this started out as a curiosity project and now has turned into a data collection of tens of thousands of people and astronomical amounts of information. And it's become such a huge project that we never anticipated we would be dealing with these kinds of numbers, these kinds of inconsistencies, but on a broad a collection of this kind of information, we're going to be able to give this to people that are going to be able to analyze this and correlate some incredibly damning facts out of all of this. Now, I am not a forensic medical specialist by any stretch of the imagination, but I know a couple. right? And this is where the task force is doing some really, really good work right now as far as for bridging networks, creating communities, and working towards longer-term insights and vision. This week, we just welcomed to the group the CARES, which is the Canadian Adverse Vaccine Event Reporting System. That's what it is, right?
Yeah.
Adverse Event, yes, CARES. And there's, although there's different organizations doing this kind of data collection, their primary focus is to connect people with that, with medical professionals that can corroborate, confirm their damage, their injury, and not just that, not just get the information, but then try to find a way to connect them to help. So it's not just an information gathering. They want, they're looking to make an impact, not to, just to hear from those that have been injured, but to provide help in some way, shape, or form. And this is going to be different for all of these different adverse reactions. And there are so many of them, thousands of them. And they're all going to have to be approached in a different way. But we can't help these people until we can identify the things that are consistent with it. And the government and the bad guys are not making this easy on those guys, same as they're not making it easy on the rest of us.
Well, they won't. They'll continue to fight this tooth and nail, but they know they're starting to lose the narrative. Honestly, believe that. You can't hide the bodies forever, Wayne. And information that's coming out around the world right now, people are starting to get onto this, and they're asking a lot of questions, and so they should. The Canadian Adverse Effects Reporting site, I had a look at that. I was having a hard time actually finding numbers there, but I read all the adverse effects that they're reporting, and they're, of course, almost identical to what the Pfizer data drops provided with us a couple of weeks ago. So the information is coming out, but if we could only get this information on the mainstream, Wayne, if we could only get the mainstream media to do their job, there wouldn't be another person in the world ever to get a vaccine if they knew what you know and I know right now. Period.
Well, this is the problem in our expectations is we expect them to be doing a job that we think that they should be doing, and in fact they're doing the job that they're actually being paid to do.
Well,
and
of course,
that's the problem, right? And this is again just some of the things that we're facing in this battle, as I said earlier, that's hitting us from every direction and every angle. And that's not to say that we aren't getting better every single day with combating that, but we have to admit and realize that the people with the conservative ideology, the Canadian nationalists, I guess, the people that believe in Canada, we weren't organized for this kind of a battle. We had no idea what we were getting into, and we've seen the evolution over the last 3 years, and where we're at now is very different than we were at 6 months ago. And the level of organization and a high level of organization that is coming is now only just starting to have an impact and starting to make a bigger difference. And it's happening in ways and places that we're not necessarily seeing it because we're not getting that kind of – the deserved coverage of it. A couple examples of that is in Manitoba where we went out and did some speaking a couple of months ago. Some of those communities took to heart and started implementing some of the things that they were doing. And one particular school division out there lost 600 students. Another school division lost 800 students. They're going to homeschooling, and what does that do? That means there's 16 less teachers in one school division and who knows how many in another school division, and then they're not getting funding. Guess what? Those school divisions are starting to collapse, which means that there's going to be teachers that are going to have opportunities to work elsewhere outside of the corrupt, damaged system. This is where you take back your communities, right? These are the kinds of things that they are making it so hard for us to accomplish because we're not allowed to communicate. We're not allowed to disseminate accurate, helpful information. But one at a time, we are making that difference. Another example of this, and I consider this a massive victory. One young lady here that's fighting her ex-husband over vaccinating the three kids. And the lawyer was very reluctant to fight this fight. He said that it was over before it even got started. Well, we were contacted and provided enough information to completely change that legal team's mind. And as much as he knows he's jeopardizing his career, he's doing the right thing now because he actually feels like he has a case that he can fight and win. This is the difference in the impact that it's making one by one by one. And these are the things that we don't necessarily see happening, but they are happening. And I'm heading out next week to go and give another kickstart to those people in southern Manitoba.
Hmm. Well, they just had a big blizzard there, so I hope you don't get buried in snow, because apparently they just had a really bad storm go through there, Wayne. I don't know if you got hit with that in Saskatchewan. Oh, you got a 4x4. Well, and you're laughing. Did you get any kind of storm in Saskatchewan? Because it was a big one hit Manitoba.
No, we just got cold. It was cold. We got a little tiny skip of snow, but it was just really, really cold, unusually cold for the season. But I kind of got to remember, for me, I grew up in a place where we had 9 months of winter and 3 months of bad sledding, so snow doesn't spook me.
And where was that?
High level Alberta. 75 kilometers, basically, from the Northwest Territories border.
Well, that's way the hell up there, Wayne. Did you have running water and electricity?
Yes, sir, we did. For at least the summer part of the season, it was a Hail Mary guess from day to day in the wintertime, but we got real good at thawing out pipes, not just ours, but everybody's.
Common problem in the wintertime, buddy. That's why we always make sure we got our pipe heaters plugged in, because once they get frozen, they're a pain in the butt to get unfrozen. That's for sure.
I know. I grew up like an episode of the Trailer Park Boys, to be quite honest with you. That's kind of where I grew up, and I got really good and familiar at thawing out probably 50 different homes in the neighborhood over the winter time. But we looked after each other, right? Because there was nobody to call for help. There was no government hanging over us saying, "We'll fix each part of you."
Well, that's when strong community really meant something, because you had to support each other. Like you said, it was a long ways to go to get help. And if you didn't have your neighbor, you had nothing. So people worked together. It's just like even in Toronto, when I was growing up, Wayne, like I reflect back on my childhood. And, you know, my mom and we lived right downtown Toronto on Drury Street, Jane and Annette area of Toronto, which now is a very, very bad area of Toronto. But back then, my mom had no problem at all letting me go anywhere I wanted, you know, within two or three blocks of the house, because she knows she could get on the phone and call somebody over on Frederick Street or somebody over a couple blocks the other way, and they'd track me down and they'd send me home. That's the kind of community I grew up in. Now, people don't even know their neighbor. They can't converse with their neighbor because they don't know them. There is no community anymore. That's been taken away from them. It's been done incrementally over the years by methods of division. Go ahead.
You know, I get, this is divine manifestation happening right here on the spot again. As you bring up and to turn this conversation to talking about community, this has been where my brain has absolutely been stuck for the last little while. And I started on having this concept and an idea of a project to start here a little bit ago, but everything that's happening to me the last month keeps pushing me towards this project. And so last Sunday we drove in out to Regina and spoke to about 150 people there as a bit of a test run on this subject matter. And all this time, and you know, even as we were discussing it here, you know, some of my experiences from where I grew up and the challenges of that community just continuously reaffirms to me. And I keep hearing and listening to the different communities and people all across the country and the challenges that they're facing. And a lot of it has to do with groups coming apart, groups not, you know, they're losing support. They feel like they're losing support. And really what it boils down to is they're losing community, because they're not mutually invested in their community. They're not supporting their community in a way that provides a reinvestment in their community. So when I think about all of the lessons that I've learned growing up as I did, you know, in such a frontier town, basically, for lack of a better term, where we didn't have those kinds of supports readily available that most people have come accustomed to, we learned that no individual could survive without community. So right. We took part in our community. And so I've been, the more communities that I speak to, I hear the cries that they're having in this regard. And this is what we're, what I'm doing in this speaking tour that starting next week, is to giving them actionable things that they can do, because we need to start thinking about how do we as individuals survive if our community doesn't survive. So many of us have put thought into prepping for our own, you know, we've got food, we've got rice, we've got our beans, those kinds of things, but we still can't survive unless we have community and community support. So how can we regenerate, recreate? And by that, the tour is called the Restoration Tour. How do we restore these values that support our communities? Because at the end of the day, the more we support our communities and restore them to communal governance and support, the less dependency we have on the communism and the fascism. And this is how we break the system.
Yeah. Absolutely, Wayne. And I know a lot of people are starting to think that way, that alone we have no power, but as a community we have lots of power. And the power of our voices when they're joined together is very loud. And you know, and I know that it's been top down for many, many years in Canada. Well, it's got to start getting from bottom up again. And that's the way we started, is taking back your own community. And if we could talk about doing that on a municipal level also, Wayne, where people get involved, get elected to their councils, and stop the globalist agenda that's being implemented, because every mayor in every city in Canada is a member of the council of mayors for that particular province, which of course is just an arm of the government, and the municipalities are just doing the government's bidding as far as globalist agendas are going. So the way we stop that is get back control of our councils first and get back control of our communities. Go ahead.
I'm taking it a couple of layers deeper than that even. I'm looking at giving the communities immediate progress tools, implementation tools, support tools, and how-tos that are going to impact their communities right here, right now, to help them empower and survive the things like the food crisis, the cash crisis, talking value exchange systems, things that are implementable right now, right now. And out of those kinds of action, affirmative actions, they can create the community that can become those power blocks within the community. Right now, we don't need to think about elections, perhaps in some municipalities, but how do you figure out who, what, where, and when within your community actually is of the same mindset, is through affirmative actions, walking, not talking, getting out there and doing some of these things to restore our community. And when we start to look at our communities, a simple little thing most people don't stop and think about, and this was really powerful in Regina last week, when I asked the crowd of 150 people there, how many people know what the barter system is all about, you know, and 90% of the crowd stuck their hand up. I said, okay, how many of you people know anybody else in your community that uses the barter system? Three people stick their hand up. They were floored.
Really?
That is the kind of thinking that we need to get back to. This is how we restore our communities away from this dependence of the municipalities, so that when it comes time to reseat those municipalities, we're doing it from a position of authority.
Not go back, desperation. Go back real quick to the guy that's producing fuel for 25 cents a liter. Can you just talk about that for a sec? Because a couple of people are asking me questions about that, Wayne.
Rebel News, David Menzies.
I didn't see the report. I should have listened to it. What's he using again?
Straight ammonia.
Straight ammonia.
Yep.
And is he using a special carburetor, or how does that work, Wayne?
He did say that there was a conversion kit that was quite comparable to the old propane conversion type of thing. But right now they're waiting on patent stuff, and then we'll obviously be able to get more information on it. But it's basically about you know, very similar to the propane conversion. I had propane vehicles. I had about 85% of the power, 85% of the mileage, and one-third of the cost. And this works out to be almost exactly the same and has zero emissions.
Is there a website somewhere, Wayne?
Rebel Media, Rebel News.
Go watch David Menzies' report on it. Yeah, I'm going to go listen to it, Wayne. I haven't actually listened to it yet. But talking about that kind of stuff and patents, if I was that gentleman, I'd be in fear for my life, because oil companies are not going to want that to get out to the public. They're not going to want the public to know that they can run their vehicles for 25 cents a liter. They'll do just about anything to stop that information from coming forward. And we've seen that in the past, Wayne. So I hope it happens. I hope it comes forward. And I hope everybody embraces it, because, boy, that would sure give them a little kick in the derriere, wouldn't it?
You know, sometimes our safety is in the exposure. If nobody knows about you, it's easy to take you out. The more people know about you, the harder it is to take you out.
Well, obviously, with the report on Rebel News, they have, I think, 1.2 million subscribers. A lot of people have seen that video already, Wayne, so that's a good thing.
Absolutely, and the more the better. You know, and these kinds of things, once the ideas come out, they become unstoppable.
Well, I'm going to have to go look into that, because at $2 a liter, I drove to Houston and back from my town, which is about a three-hour drive each way, yesterday. And last year I did that trip. It was $70 in fuel return. And yesterday I spent $130 in fuel return. So I'm all on board. 25 cents a liter sounds pretty good right about now, buddy, because these gas prices are killing us. They really are. And, of course, everything's relevant to fuel, because everything gets transported using fossil fuels. Go ahead, Wayne. We got about 3 minutes left.
Tell me about it. I was just talking about me heading out on the road for this speaking tour, and my little three-quarter-sized SUV Chev Blazer used to cost $50 to fill it up. Now it's $100, and it's one of the worst pigs I've ever had in my life. I'm going to be begging for fuel money and donations 5 miles down the road the way it goes. So this is... maybe not the best time I could have ever picked to decide to go on a road trip, but I don't think it's going to get any better anytime soon.
Just take a hose and a 5 gallon can and you're all right.
You know, I watched a guy in, I don't remember where it was, I believe it was South America, that had converted a motorcycle to run on water. And I was thinking, man, that guy's got it figured out. Now, it isn't the first time I'd heard about it. My dad knew about doing that when I was a kid, but dad was a GM master mechanic with 20-some patents to his name. So I asked him, I said, why don't you do some of these? Why don't you build some of these? He said, because they kill me.
Well, they will. I mean, we know for a fact that the hydrogen cell is a reality. They are doing everything they can to keep that from the public as long as they can. But eventually, it's going to come forward. It is.
When people get up in David's interview as well, and it's a good point to watch out for in there. You'll hear about the stability differences between hydrogen cells and ammonia as a fuel source. So interesting stuff.
Yeah, well, I know for a fact that it's a reality and it's been proven and it does work. They just don't want the public to know that, because if the public really got hands on something that could run their vehicle on water, you would see the oil industry go out of business in a very, very short period of time. And it's not only that, it's just the power that the petrol dollar has in our society and our world right now would disappear. Of course, it would disappear overnight, Wayne. You know that, and I know it. So they're going to fight tooth and nail to keep that away. But I believe that's coming, especially in light of the fact that the U.S. Navy announced that, I think it's by 2029 or 2028, that a good majority of the vessels running on the ocean for the U.S. Navy will be powered by the hydrogen cell.
You know, Dr. Patrick Moore is one to listen to about alternative energy sources. He's got a lot to say and does not get nearly the recognition he deserves for what he knows and what he speaks to. He gets too easily branded as being the found, one of the founders of Greenpeace, and he absolutely was. But it's that same organization that it was when he first founded that. And when he founded it, they won the fights, and they changed the world, and they made it a better place, the places that they did. But then it, once they won those fights, the real fights, then they became a corporate, corrupt, evil entity, and that's how we know them today. But he, the man, is still as convicted by the right things as he was back when he was young and enthusiastic.
I've listened to him talk many times. I really like the guy.
These are the kinds of things we need to influence ourselves by alternative creative thinking and get away from this hive board mentality and needing dependence on the state. And that's what I'm doing.
I have things here I never even got to today I wanted to talk to you about, Wayne, so I'll have to wait for another day because we're out of time. I'm going to thank you for coming in, and if there's anything you'd like to say real quick before I let you go, please do so, and we'll look forward to our next conversation sometime down the road real soon.
Pay attention to what we're doing on the Ethics Over Fear website, folks. This is where we're going to be talking and covering a lot about the Canadian restoration. What's it going to take? Not from a political sense, but from our community sense. How do we restore our communities? That's up to us. And there's a lot of help that's out there. I'll be touring around the countryside. If you want to book one of these events, we'll get your community empowered too. Reach out to us. There's all kinds of ways to reach us. And as far as for the horrible, swampy, evil side of things, we've got a lot of good interviews coming up on What's Up Canada over the next few weeks. Guys, hold on to your hats. We're going to blow some bubbles.
Cool. Tune in, folks, and listen to what Wayne and his organization is doing. I strongly recommend that. Okay, Wayne, well, I'm going to let you go, my friend. I look forward to our next conversation, like I said, and hopefully that'll be real soon. It's having you in. You're a smart guy. I like getting smart guys in because it makes me look smart, so I'll have to have you back real soon.
It's a successful business model. I do the same thing. I don't bring people in to listen to me talk. They can do that anytime they want. I bring people in so that folks can hear smart people. So happy Easter to you and all of your community and the listeners out there that are paying attention. And thanks for the opportunity to come on and rant a little bit about things that I might know just a little bit about or not. Check it out yourself.
Thanks, Wayne. Always a pleasure.
Pleasure.
Bye for now.
Bye for now.
Okay, folks, going to be back in 3 minutes with Billy Joyce, and I know Billy's got some pretty cool stuff to talk about. We were talking about a couple days ago, so hang on, should be an interesting hour. Back in a few minutes. Welcome back, third hour. And I'm just trying to keep my my guest here for the third hour in check. He just wants to go here. Okay, Billy, Billy, you're good to have Billy Joyce back in, and always enjoy conversations with this man. Billy does a lot of research. Probably, I'll be quite honest, he does more research than I do, and I try to do a lot, but I think Billy blows me out of the box because he seems to know a lot more about stuff than I do. So that's why it's always great to have him in. Billy, welcome back to the show, my friend. And let's start with your pet peeve of the week, maybe. How's that?
Well, I think my pet peeve of the week has probably been my pet peeve of the last 10 years. And that's, I don't know, I guess you'd call it mainstream propaganda. Pretty much everything that anyone wearing a necktie on television is telling us is a lie. And because 80 to 90% of the population is still relying on the mainstream news or the legacy news or whatever you want to call it, to establish what they perceive as reality, it's causing a major problem. It's causing an irrational and unhealthy dependence on government and media based on lies.
And do you think it's 80-90% still listening, Billy? Do you think the number's that high?
Okay,
I don't think so.
I'd say maybe 80-90% of people aged 45, 50 and above. It seems that the younger crowd is waking up, but it's almost as though they don't care. And it feels like there's nothing they can do about it. Whereas our generation kind of understands the process, but because we understand the process, a lot of the people that are awake are saying, it's too big to confront. There's just nothing you can do. You know, the machine is too big. And I keep telling people, I'm like, the machine's too big. Really, when you look at it, like a province like Nova Scotia, you've got 55 members of the Legislative Assembly. Is that really that big a machine? I mean, sure, the 55 probably have 10 bureaucrats working under them that have probably been in government or working for the government for the past 20 years, their career bureaucrats. So, okay, multiply that by 10. That's 550 people governing a million. When, let's say, in the million, in the case of Nova Scotia, let's say in the million, even though there's 80% watching the mainstream, even those watching the mainstream are fed up with a lot of the narratives, especially the pandemic. Like, I'm seeing a lot of people that are double vaccinated or boosted even saying something doesn't make sense here. You know, like the people ending up in hospital are double vaccinated. The people dying are double vaccinated. The unvaccinated are getting through it. Like, COVID went through my house and through one of my best friend's houses. Both families are unvaccinated. We're eight of us between the two families. And the worst that anyone got was flu-like symptoms for 3 days. I hit a fever of 100.4. My daughter had a fever of 101. But within 2 days, I was taking quercetin, black seed oil extract, zinc, vitamin D3, vitamin C, and chaga mushroom juice.
Where'd you get the chaga mushroom juice from, Billy?
This old hippie from BC somewhere, this old wise man from BC who spends half his year in the woods, sent them to me.
his name, all the way across Canada.
Yeah, his name gives you the impression of royalty, but, you know, he's a very humble guy, even though his last name is Prince.
Thanks.
But all that.
Thanks for the kind words, Billy.
Yeah. No, seriously, Barry, that stuff there, I got an infection in my guts. And within 2 days, it subsided. And I didn't have to take antibiotics.
Yeah, well, I've been drinking it for years, Billy, and I love what it does to my body. And most people that I share it with, I won't say 100% of the people, but most people I share it with notice big changes in their body, usually within 2 to 3 months of getting on Chaga because of its detoxifying effect on the human body. It is truly one of it is in the top five superfoods in the whole world today. So putting that in your body, you're doing yourself a good thing.
Yeah, I don't do it enough is my problem. I got to find a way to maximize what I have and make as much juices. I found I prefer it most cold with iced tea, like iced tea mixed with the chaga juice
on
ice is just
it doesn't really have a taste. Yeah, it doesn't. Chaga really doesn't have a taste. It's kind of like a birchy, earthy taste. That's how I describe it.
Yeah, it's a woody. It's kind of like a woody, earthy.
Well, came from the birch tree.
Well, it makes perfect sense.
Doesn't that make sense? Eh?
You know,
finally something that makes sense in our world, Billy.
Well, it's like pine needle tea. It's going to taste like pine needles.
I've been bugging my landlord here to get me some more birch water because they have birch trees on their property. But I made some pine needle tea using birch water. And I drank a couple glasses of that, and it was just like, whoa, supercharge. It's incredible.
People, goosebumps on your goosebumps. Not drinking,
yeah, but anybody that's not drinking pine needle tea, Billy, they're really doing themselves a disservice because pine trees grow everywhere. Just go out and get some needles, make yourself some tea, and drink it. It's really incredible what it does to the body. I've been drinking pretty regular. I make about 2 pots a week, and I drink pine needle. But I take my chaga every day, religiously. I drink 2 ounces of that every morning when I get up.
See, I got to get into that routine.
What did I send you? I sent you dried product, didn't I? I sent you some pounds, right?
Yes.
How many pounds did I send you? I can't remember.
2 pounds.
Oh, you need more. You got to get your hands on about 10 pounds, Billy, and then make yourself a batch of concentrate like I make it. It's water extraction. And that's the best way to take chaga because you're getting about 85% of the nutrients out of the chaga.
Or maybe it was 5 pounds. It was a shoebox.
I think it was 5 pounds I sent.
It was 5 pounds you sent me.
Well, then that's enough to make a batch. I think I told you that when I shipped you.
I've been making little batches. I'll tell you what I did is I took, I'd say usually maybe 2 cups of it, grind it up in my blender, and bring 4 cups of water to 155 degrees. No hotter than that. And then I put the chaga powder into it and leave it sit there for an hour. And then I run it through a coffee filter, and I'll drink the first cup hot, and then the rest of it I put it into little mason jars and put it in the fridge. And whenever I want some, I just mix it with iced tea.
Cool. Well, let me know when you're out of it. We'll send you some more.
Okay, perfect. Because right now the dried stuff I just put them in mason jars and I just make it as I need it. Because I wouldn't have enough.
You might be able to find something a little closer, so the freight's not as much. You know, some of the best chaga in the world, believe it or not, comes out of Northern Ontario. They say the best chaga in the whole world comes out of Siberia, Billy.
Well, I was thinking even Labrador. Like, I know people up in Northern Newfoundland.
Yeah, you want to be, of course, in a cold climate. That's the best. That's why Northern Ontario produces really good chaga.
Right.
That's why Siberia produces good chaga. And believe it or not, number three, they say, is Northern British Columbia.
I believe that.
Where I get a lot of mine from up north, but I get a lot of my chaga from the Yukon.
Okay. So anyway, when we were talking about chickpeas and propaganda. One of the biggest pieces of propaganda right now is the narrative we're hearing from not only the legacy media, but from our politicians. And it's what's going on in Ukraine.
Let's talk about that for a few minutes, Billy. What is going on over there?
Well, we know that when it started, and you see, here's the problem. People think this started in March, or was it late February, whatever. A lot of people think this started in 2022, when in reality, this started all the way back in 2014, when you refer to the eastern portion of Ukraine, the Donbass, and I believe it's Dunskirk or Donetsk, the Donetsk region. So the Donetsk and Donbass, even Mariupol, you'll hear them talk of Mariupol on TV or Kyiv. And what I find funny is the majority of Canadians that jump on this bandwagon, if you were to actually put a map of Europe or the world in front of them and ask them to point out Ukraine, they wouldn't have a clue where it's at.
But we're fighting for you.
You know, for land of the free. Zelensky is the champion of freedom. He's the champion of democracy. So anyway.
Look into his background, Billy.
I'm going to talk about his background. I'm going to talk about what's been going on there. So
most people think he's a good guy. Go ahead, Billy.
Well, that's just it, right? So people don't understand that at one time, Ukraine didn't exist. Ukraine was part of the USSR. It was part of they recognized Russia as the motherland. And then after the fall of Russia, well, they tried to, in 2014, they created what was called, I think it was the Minsk Accord is what it was called. And the people of eastern Ukraine wanted to be governed under Russian. They wanted to fall under Russian rule. They wanted nothing to do with Ukraine, the Ukrainian government, or the direction at that time that Poroshenko was taking Ukraine in. And when I actually go look at the people that are in Ukraine, right, and you look at – it's kind of like in Canada. You can't compare the people in Toronto that live downtown Toronto or that live downtown Ottawa to the farmers in Saskatchewan. Now, can you? They're completely different mindsets, completely different worldviews. So from what I'm understanding is the Russian – the people in eastern Ukraine – were of Russian origin. Okay, so they speak Russian or Ukrainian. Oftentimes when you watch the Western media reporting on what's going on in the Ukraine, you're going to get an English-speaking Ukrainian from Kiev or from Lviv, which is in the western portion of Ukraine. Now, if what Putin is saying is true, the western portion of Ukraine has been run by the Azov Battalion. The Azov Battalion is a battalion within the Ukrainian government that was very tight with Poroshenko and now very tight with Zelensky. So Zelensky condones the work that the Azov Battalion does. The Azov Battalion, whenever anyone from the Azov Battalion is captured, they're all tattooed with swastikas. Now, when their swastikas don't represent a hatred towards Jews, their swastikas represent a hatred towards people who do not want to conform to their style of rule, to Ukrainians who want to be Russian. And what's been going on for 14 years in the eastern portion of Ukraine is there's what was called the DPR, and they form their own military. And the DPR is a group of – it's basically everyone – apparently in 2014 they had a referendum – 98% of people in eastern Ukraine wanted to leave Ukraine and join Russia, or at the very least allow themselves to be run by Russia while still existing in the Ukraine. And Poroshenko denied their wishes. And then Zelensky won his election by promising to put an end to the starvation and to the discrimination that Poroshenko was doing in those areas. And Zelensky reneged. Zelensky basically sided with the quote-unquote New World Order. Yeah. Now, the rumors I'm hearing and what seems to be – okay, so when Russia went in, they were saying, no, we're going in to denazify. And they said they were going in to clear out bioweapons. And they were saying that these bioweapon facilities could actually target certain ethnicities. So in other words, bioweapons that are created to target certain DNA or gene pools. Wrap your head around that. That's pretty evil, violent stuff, right? So when he says he's going in to do all this, the mainstream media in the West and the governments in the West deny. Well, then they couldn't deny it once you started getting images of Ukrainian soldiers being captured with swastikas tattooed on their chest. Now, could you? Right, and then all of a sudden you get the Undersecretary of Defense or something from the United States being interviewed, where she admits, "Oh yeah, we have biological research facilities, but we're not developing bioweapons." No. What we're doing there is we're doing research to make sure that bioweapons aren't developed. Well, how can you do research to prevent right?
I'll sell you a bridge.
Right. So that's strike two. And then you see CNN say, well, we're reporting live from a bunker. And then you see them in this bunker and there are pillars behind them, like marble pillars and marble casings around the doors. And then they switch angles and you see curtains in a window. Oh, so you're not in a bunker. So then you land on a gentleman by the name of Patrick Lancaster. In one of my previous videos on Rumble and BitChute, I featured a French journalist. It's a lady. I forget her name now. I don't have it in front of me. But she's been in the eastern portion of Ukraine. So in a nutshell, what's been going on in Ukraine is you got an independent military from Donetsk regions along with Crimea, because Crimea is down there, used to be part of Ukraine, and then Russia annexed it. You're familiar with that, I'm sure.
Of course.
Crimea. So yep. Russia wants to make sure NATO is not on their border. And if Ukraine joins NATO and that eastern portion of Ukraine remains under Ukrainian rule, well, then NATO is on Russia's doorstep. So the United States is all upset, or NATO's upset that Russia has this position, but yet when Russia wanted to put missiles down in Cuba, which is a heck of a lot further than where Ukraine is from Russia, well, we nearly had a war. The Cuban Missile Crisis and that Cold War with Russia was all about
that was close.
So it's like we're hypocrites in all of it. Yeah. And the English speaking world needs to do a conscience check, because a big gut check. Because when you look at even Canada, what happened here, with the natives, with the deportation of the Acadians, with everything, it was the British Empire that was behind all of it. Whether we want to admit it or not, it was the British Empire, along with the Catholic Church, that was behind all of it. Now, you look at Ukraine now, fast forward, and who's supporting what's going on in Ukraine right now? Canada, the United States, and Great Britain. And in the United States, it's only a portion of the politicians. Oh, and it just so happens to be the portion of politicians that are with the party that identify most with the people that didn't want independence in the United States, that wanted the British to rule the United States as well. And then you mix all that in with those theories that were passed on. They're not theories. George Bush's father worked for Hitler. George H.W. Bush, his father, from what I understand.
Prescott Bush, you're talking about.
Right. From what I understand, he had ties to Hitler. I don't know what they were. But
he did through the Bayer Corporation, Billy.
There you go. So then
I looked into that a lot. There's lots there. Go ahead.
And you look at modern leaders, and you look at the ties between Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, and the Ukraine. And now the laptop that the media deemed to be Russian disinformation back when the election was going on, well, now we're finding out that was all true.
It's so part of the record in the Congression.
That's right.
Part of the congressional record now in the United States, Billy.
Exactly.
This isn't going to go away for them. We know that.
Right. So 10% going to the big guy. The big guy there is Joe Biden. Okay. And then you've got Canadian connections. Because don't forget this Azov battalion. Who trained them?
Canadian government. Imagine that.
Right. And then Chrystia Freeland's grandfather, who did she work for?
Oh, nothing to see there, Billy.
He worked for the newspaper that pushed German propaganda. And Chrystia Freeland's mother, who did she work hand-in-hand with in Ukraine to establish the new laws and the new system of governance that they're using in Kyiv that the Russians are opposing?
It was George Soros.
It was George Soros and Chrystia Freeland's mother. And when Chrystia Freeland studied at Harvard and went to study over there, she was identified by the KGB as a Ukrainian spy, and she's wanted in Russia.
Our associate prime minister, minister of finance, that girl?
Right.
The one that's got her legs always in very, very weird positions, that girl?
Legs? How about her head?
Oh, man.
She stands behind Justin Trudeau. That woman is owed millions of dollars by the bobblehead company.
She is.
Well, she must be, because they must have mimicked the bobblehead off of Chrystia Freeland.
Have you ever seen the head going up and down behind Justin?
Right, like she's standing behind Justin Trudeau, and her head is just shaking. She looks like I'm like, is that AI malfunctioning? Is that the clone not working properly, or did she just do a line the length of my arm backstage before coming out for the press conference?
quick, guys, her battery's dying. Yeah. Get a fresh one, please. Get in there.
Like there's something wrong there, right? But you look at so everything I just said about Ukraine. Has anyone covered that in the mainstream media in Canada, United States, the way I just did? And then you go look at this Patrick Lancaster, and he's talking to people on the ground in Ukrainian and Russian. He's got a translator with him. And they're saying that it's the Ukraine that was using residential areas and using Ukrainians as human shields. And they weren't allowed to leave. If they tried to leave, they were shot in the back.
Wow. Unreal.
Like I've spent the last 2 days going to watch this guy's. Like for example, he put out a video 12 hours ago. He's already got 265,000 views.
And this is this Mr. Lancaster that you're talking
about. Patrick Lancaster. Please send me his link,
okay? And I'll start.
I will send you his link. Because I'll be honest, I watched some of it. And I mean, this guy's on the ground. It was funny because I don't know if you had a chance to watch the last Rumble video that I put out. I put out a video yesterday, the day before yesterday. And I featured his journalism. I featured a lot of stuff from his channel. And then I showed Katie Simpson from CBC. You know who I'm talking about, right? Katie Simpson. Yeah, she's got the funky glasses and blonde hair. Yeah. And she's a bigger lady. And she just stands there with her smile. Anyway, she's like, we're live in the Ukraine. And behind her is literally a fresh produce market. Like lettuce, tomatoes, cucumbers, people buying stuff, people walking around. Life is normal. Like, doesn't look like there's a war going on at all. And she's standing there and she's like, we spoke to two women today who claim that they're staying till the bitter end. And I'm like, okay, we're going to see these two women. Nope. Just believe what Katie Simpson tells you. You know, like,
they never lie to you, Billy.
Come on, so it's like, okay, so who am I supposed to believe here? Do I believe Patrick Lancaster, where you can actually see the PTSD in his face from what he's witnessing? Or do I believe Katie Simpson, who's all made up with her eyeshadow and her blush with her camera team, telling me how bad it is while people are buying fresh produce behind her?
Yeah, well, somebody forgot to keep that out of the picture, Billy. Somebody got fired over that. That wasn't supposed to be on TV.
Well, either that or they're doing it on purpose to show just how crazy they are. And it's just a test on us. Like, how long is it going to take for us to wake up?
You know what? I ask myself that question every day, Billy. I do. Because we need to get that happening real quick here in this country. Because, you know, and I know the government's absolutely gone crazy here. And they're just ramping it up and ramping it up. I wanted to ask you a question, though. You had a little confrontation with the radio station that you were working with. A little standoff. How did that turn out?
That turned out that there's nothing they can do. I'm going to get... I'm going to get the contract I wanted, and I'm going to give in. And what I'm going to do in the morning, instead of going on the rants that I usually do, I'm just going to talk about feel-good stories and whatever else. And if people want to see what's really going on in the world, they can come to my Rumble channel or my BitChute channel. And already there's been a change in attitude in the community, and people are talking about it. And, oh, my God, Billy changed what he's talking about, and it's so wonderful. And it's because I think I was stressing people out. I think people believe me, but they were so stressed out by the information I was sharing, they didn't want to hear it.
Oh, you know what I would say to that, Billy? Well, I've got a box of Kleenex here, and if I hurt your feelings, I've got a Kleenex and I've got a bandage.
Yeah, no, I get
my
it.
My feelings on that, people got to hear what's going on.
I get it, but if you lived here and you'd experienced what I've experienced over the last 10 years, and it becomes a matter of putting food on the table for your family, because they wanted me fired, like literally they wanted me gone. Like, that's how fickle it was at one point there, where it was, when I say it was bad, it was really bad. And it was coming from clients who have been buying advertising with us for a decade.
Yeah, well, that definitely starts to influence.
You know what I mean? So,
yeah,
I got to make a decision there for the organization. I can't be selfish and say, well, I want to tell the truth and that's it. So, occasionally.
No.
And I get it, and that my board knows, and people know that if the I told you so moment ever comes, it's going to come, and it's going to come hard. Mm-hmm. And what I told them, I said, it's not necessarily the I told you so that I want. I said, I want people to realize it now so that I don't have to watch many people die.
Well, we don't want that to be – I don't want to be able to say I told you so, Billy, but we're not too far away from that right now, unfortunately.
Well, it's happening. It's happening all around us, but people are blind to it, and people are finding any way that they can to pretend that it can't possibly be the vaccine, or it can't possibly be a side effect. Like right now, I've got a cousin, 44 years old. He had a time in his life where he did steroids and stuff, and he got really big and really muscular. He's kept in good shape, He doesn't smoke. He drinks occasionally. He's a trucker. He ended up with COVID, I guess, like a year ago. And I guess he's had lingering issues with his lungs. Ended up with double pneumonia. Was rushed to the hospital a week ago. They put him on a ventilator. And now they're not sure if he's going to survive.
And how old is he?
44.
I'm hearing stories like this all the time now, Billy. Not just once in a while. I'm hearing stories like this all the time from all over the place. People are dying. And it's starting to become a very, very widely spoken about issue in our society. I know four people myself, Billy, that have died. I've got to attribute it to the jibby jab, because that really is the only thing that seems to be the common factor among them all, is heart problems and heart attacks, and always after the booster. So
here's the thing, is I think he's double jabbed for sure. I think he has his booster. I'm not positive. I was concerned because 2 days after he ended up in the hospital with double pneumonia, I didn't really know. No one knew, because the family only, my cousin only went up. He was 2 days in, like, by the time she got time off work and managed to fly there and everything else. So his double pneumonia was getting better, and then his kidneys failed. They had him on dialysis. And then I was like, what the hell? Like, what do you mean? He went in for double pneumonia, and now his kidneys are failing? And then 2 days after that, I watched the Stu Peters interview. So my first question was, are they treating him with remdesivir? And everyone got angry at me. Everyone got angry at me for just asking the question. Finally, last night, his sister confirmed that they hadn't used remdesivir.
You're kidding me.
They haven't used remdesivir because it wasn't COVID. But remdesivir is bad. Remdesivir is what Stu Peters, and that they're theorizing that remdesivir contains the venom as well, right?
Of course. I've looked at all kinds of information
now,
and that's the best thing they can come up with, Billy.
Is she telling me that no, they haven't treated him because she doesn't want to admit it, or did they really not treat him with remdesivir? Either way, I'm never going to know, and there's nothing I can do because they think I'm nuts.
Because the effect of remdesivir is kidneys dialysis.
Well, I know that's why I asked, right? But now apparently his kidneys are still affected. Now his heart's been affected now. So now they're trying to wake him up out of the coma. His lungs are getting a bit better, but every time they take him off they try to take him off life support, like they try to take him off his drug-induced coma, I guess his heart goes into fucking overdrive. Oh,
watch your language. Watch your language,
Billy. Oh, please. I'm sorry.
Please. We try not to drop the
F-bomb. I didn't even realize I said it. It's my cousin, okay.
Okay, we'll let that one slide by, but yeah, just try and – I know it slips out once in a while, but we'll just leave it at that. But yeah, try not to drop it.
Yeah, he's my cousin, and it's just – it's heart-wrecking.
It is. I've lost a couple friends, people that I've sat down and talked to for years. I've lost now because of the jibby jabs, and that's what I'm going to attribute to, because they're all dying from heart-related issue. I've got a friend here in town, Billy, that went and got the third booster, and now he is on a regimen of drugs, seven different drugs that he has to take every day now going forward, since his diagnosis was severe myocarditis. They flew into Vancouver because they thought he had a heart attack. He got down to Vancouver, had all these tests done, told him what his prognosis or his diagnosis was, and he is diagnosed with severe myocarditis, which doctors will tell you, and they'll tell you, based on that information, you've got 2 to 5 years to live. You won't live past 5 years. Isn't that great? Isn't that great what they're doing to our people, man? And this is going on in our society. Well, that's just one. I've got four different situations I could talk to you about right now, Billy, where people have died, and they died just after getting the booster. So tell me it's all a coincidence. And that's just people I know. And I'm hearing it everywhere on social media. I'm hearing about people up in the Indian reserves around town that are dying mysteriously, a real spike in deaths in the elderly people.
It really makes you wonder. I run a radio station, and I get emails. I was getting emails every single day. So when they declared the state of emergency in Nova Scotia all the way back in, I believe it was March or April of 2020, March of 2020, I was getting an email every single day. And they were justifying the lockdowns, and they were justifying the state of emergency by the number of cases and hospitalizations and deaths. But it was mostly cases they were basing it on. And I remember back then it was like there was 20 cases. Oh, there was 15 cases. There was 10 cases. There was 15 cases. Right now, I could talk about that forever too, but every time that they administered the first, when they administered the first vaccine, it went from, within 3 months, it went from 15, 20 a day to 100, 120, 150, 100, you know what I mean? And then it came back down to like 30, 40 a day. And then when they put out the second one, you had another spike where it was 300-400 a day cases. And now they've stopped reporting daily. They send us a weekly update. The weekly update this week was 6,800 cases. You're talking in a population of a million people in Nova Scotia. Right. 6,800 cases, 75% of them are either double or boosted, and 60 hospitalizations, I believe, and 12 deaths. And the median age for the people dying is 80. And when you go look at the vaccination rate for the age categories in Nova Scotia, 70 and up, it ranges from 95 to 105% boosted. What does that mean, 105%? You go look at an age category for vaccination rate, and it says 105%. Like the 80 and up is 105%. So I don't know what that means. I don't know if it means that they've got what's already mandatory, plus they've gotten the fourth shot. Like, I'm not sure what that means. But they're 105%, and it's that age category dying in the hospitals. And then, like I say, you got a family of four, and then a buddy of mine, his family of four. None of us even had to go see a doctor.
So how do we get the CBC to be accountable to the Canadian people, Billy? How do we do that?
I'm not sure.
That's our problem. If we could get that, we'd have this problem solved. Because if they expose the Canadian public to this information, the stuff that we're talking about right now, and they had access to that information, you would see nobody lining up to get another shot.
They have access.
Yeah, but it's not coming through on the mainstream, like you said, Billy.
Why would they?
A lot of people still – well, I'm just saying the mainstream ain't supporting it.
Did you hear the bill that the RCMP submitted for their service in Ottawa during the convoy? Yeah,
$217 million for catering services or something like that.
$235,000.
Okay, excuse me.
$235,000 just for meals.
Well, something they got to eat, you know, Billy.
Okay, so where do you think the CBC was hanging out during that whole time?
They were right where everything seemed to happen.
They were right with the RCMP. So they claim meals at the Chateau Laurier as well. I've seen the CBC and the Radio-Canada in action. I know how they work. They go to these gatherings and they're treated like royalty by the politicians. Hey, the only way that they could have got a picture of – do you remember when they got the picture of the Nazi flag on the stairs of the Chateau Laurier?
Yep.
The only way that those people could end up on those stairs is by going into the Chateau Laurier. And who was occupying the Chateau Laurier at the time? Cops. That was an inside job. It should have been obvious it was an inside job. You never saw that flag anywhere. So they went to the Chateau Laurier with a swastika flag, but never went up to Parliament Hill with it? They stopped at the Chateau Laurier?
Yeah, and CBC always seems to be in the right place at the right time.
Exactly. It's because they're notified in advance.
Of course I know that, Billy.
1.6 billion. I know, but it's so frustrating. People don't understand that they receive $1.6 billion. Those are operational funds. That does not count advertising.
And that's you shooting yourself in the foot, period. We're paying to be propaganda.
Right. And when it comes to advertising, okay, and I could get in trouble for saying this, but I'm going to say it anyway. CRTC-run radio stations. Where I work, we are a tiny little radio station with a market of maximum 3,000 listeners.
Okay.
When the federal government buys an advertisement with a radio station our size, they're still paying $26 to $30 per 30-second spot.
Okay.
And when they buy a contract with okay, I'll give you an example. I won't use ours. I won't give information on ours, but I'll give you information on another radio station that's got, say, 10,000 listeners. They'll average anywhere, I'd say, from $6,000 to $10,000 a month on COVID-19 advertising for the last year and a half, 2 years.
Wow.
Easily.
Wow.
Easily.
That's my pet peeve of the week, by the way, Billy.
Okay,
I can't turn on the radio and not hear about COVID-19. This is not normal.
Right. So if they're getting $6,000 to $10,000 a month, and they only have 10,000 listeners, how much money do you think CTV is getting, or how much money do you think CBC is getting, or how much money do you think the big radio stations in the cities are getting? You know, your number one radio station in Toronto that's got 2 million listeners, or the number one station in Vancouver that's got 500,000 listeners. Mm-hmm. Imagine how much money they're making on advertising of COVID-19. Mm. You know, go get your kid a boot. And if you refuse to play that advertising, well, you lose everything else that comes from that advertising agency. So you're committing if you stand up for your values, like if I were to stand up as general manager and say, we're not pushing that propaganda and refuse those contracts, I'm basically killing the radio station I work for. So I'm in.
Well, that sure puts you in a spot, doesn't it, Billy?
Oh well, it puts me in a moral dilemma. It's almost like I go to work every day and I gotta ask forgiveness every night when I come home, and it's not the greatest of sins, but it's in my mind it bothers me.
Well, I think it should, because you're supporting the enemy, even though you know you've got your job, your family, your livelihood on the line, and I can understand where you're coming from right now. It'd be a tough one to take a moral stand, but then maybe in the same mouthful, if you were, I'm not saying that you should, but if you did, maybe something good would happen. Because
no, if I did, I'll tell you exactly what would happen if I did. The board of directors would find out about it. I'd get fired. They'd hire somebody else, and they'd continue doing the same thing.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, a really good job would just drop out of nowhere that you least expected, Billy, for doing the right thing. So there you go. There's the other side of that thought for you. For
maybe, but
I know where you're coming from. I understand what you're saying. But it's a shame that you're forced to do that, given what you know about these vaccines. I can't. This is the thing that drives me nuts. I don't even want to listen to local radio, but I make myself listen because I want to count. I listen one day for an hour, and in that hour they had two or three minute blurts about COVID in that 1 hour.
See, the problem is if you take that stand, you lose all because it's an independent advertising agency that sells those advertisements to the federal and provincial governments. But they're the same. They're the same agency that sells to Canadian Tire and Subway and Kentucky Fried Chicken and A&W and Esso and Ford and Toyota. And
so you potentially lose all that.
You lose all of it. That's just it. If you refuse one, you lose all of them. You know, so it's like, and that's why I was so upset when they wanted me to stop doing what I was doing at 10 to 9, because that was my argument. I was like, how can anyone say that the radio station's biased? I said, we play advertisements for vaccines. Mm. I was like, you know, like, I'm sorry, but we're not biased. We're literally putting out the same propaganda that the mainstream media is putting out. I'm just countering it for 10 minutes in the morning, and now you're telling me that people don't want me to do that?
That's a tough one, Billy. That really is a tough one.
You know, so that's where I was at, and it played on my mind. I'd say I was almost in a state of depression there. And when I decided, to heck with it, I'm just gonna go with the flow. Like I'll say, like last week, I criticized lobster has gone to $14.50 a pound. So I criticized the industry for that. I criticized the fact that we're sending everything to China. Like, I'll still criticize certain things. I guess I just won't go into too long of a rant. Now I'll try to put more like a comedic spin on it, end it with a question. Like, does this make any sense? And it seems to be more effective. But at the same time, I'll also talk about the local credit union, an initiative that they have for an Easter egg hunt, or, you know, something that went on at the municipality, or, you know, something to appease the people that just want to sit there and, you know, numb their brains with
the word salads. And so what was lobster before it went to $14.50 a pound, Billy?
Well, for example,
a couple years ago.
Okay, so two summers ago, the first summer that we had COVID, I was buying it from the lobster pound at $5 a pound.
You were buying it from them. They're buying it from the fishermen, correct?
Well, if I'm buying it from them at $5, the fishermen were probably selling it
getting for $2.
No, probably $4 or $4.50 because the lobster pound I was getting it from, they also sell to a seller. So they'll sell it at their pound for 50 cents more than they sell it to the seller.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
And you say most of that lobster now is going to China?
Yeah.
Well, why is that? We have markets in Canada for it, don't we?
Yeah, but they're willing to pay more in China.
Hmm. Well, that's messed up.
Isn't it? Well, yeah. So even last summer, it was more expensive. Last summer, I think I was paying $8 a pound. Now this summer, well, number one, what they did in the East Coast here, lobster fishermen, well, any fishermen are no longer allowed to go commercially fish mackerel and herring. And mackerel and herring are the two fish species that are used the most for bait in the lobster in the lobster and crab fishery.
Right.
Now, the real problem are gray seals that are eating up the mackerel and herring stocks. But because we're all tree huggers in Canada now and we're scared to kill animals for industrial purposes, well, instead of having a seal hunt and developing a seal industry, because there's a market for seal fur, and there's also a market for seal meat. Well, if you got rid of a percentage of the population of the seal population, you'd have less mackerel and herring being eaten by the seals, and you'd be able to control boat stocks. But instead, they're going to let the seals keep populating the way they are. The seals are still going to keep eating the mackerel and the herring, but it's the fishermen that are going to get punished. Even as a citizen, if I want to go fish mackerel, I'm allowed to catch 10 mackerel, and they've got to be, I think it's 24 inches or 23.5 inches or something like that in length. Like, it's got to be a pretty good size. No, sorry, 29 centimeters, sorry. So it's got to be almost a foot long.
Are you seeing a drop in numbers of your herring out there?
Well, we've never really fished herring where I'm at. We've got more of a mackerel stock. I think herring is more towards the New Brunswick side of things. Yes. But a mackerel here, we've always had some. And a lot of the fishermen here have their own mackerel license. They go fish their own mackerel and freeze it for their lobster bait. So now they're going to buy mackerel. Guess from where?
Mm. Got it. The fish plants.
Well, and guess where they get it? China.
Mm. Unreal. I know out here in the West Coast that the herring, the commercial herring fishery has been shut down this year. That you're only limited to very, very few hermit herring yourself now, and our numbers are dropping drastically. But the irony of it, Billy, is that our native brothers are still allowed to go out and commercially harvest our herring. So how come that is? How come you've got one sector of society still being allowed to do something when we know the numbers are down drastically? How come that happens? I don't understand.
That's because of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. And newsflash, we're not indigenous.
What are we? What are we, Billy?
You get what I'm saying, right, though?
I know what you're saying. But yeah, play that to people because they're going, huh? What? What is he talking about now?
We're not indigenous. We're not part of the First Nations. Even I can trace back my ancestry to the Métis, and we're not identified. The government doesn't approve. So the only people that are indigenous in Canada are the people that are labeled such in the what they call the Indian Act.
Yeah, that should be thrown out the door, man.
Well, the People's Party wanted to do away with it, but no one wants to listen to the People's Party either. And now everyone's being what would be the best word for it? Everyone is being put under the spell of Pierre Poilievre.
Well, the new light, a knight shining armor on his white horse is riding in to save. He's going to save the country, Billy. Come on.
I saw one of his tweets. This is now a movement. And all I can think is, please, Lord, no. Please, Lord, no. No. It's just the other cheek. You know, two cheeks are the same. I can't say it.
Yeah, this is a family station.
I'm really sorry about the F-bomb earlier. We were talking about my cousin. I'm really sorry. I hope it doesn't get me banned from your show.
No, you know, the people, we are a Christian network, and I know the people over in Shake and Wait, they get offended by it. Most people do, and I do too, but I'm sure they'll forgive you for one. Okay, Billy?
No Thank problem. You. We'll, Thank
we'll
you.
That, we'll let that go. So,
there's one thing you can
do. You got to go to your room, though, after the show and sit in the corner for about 20 minutes with your chair, okay?
I blame my upbringing for it. It's like the F word has been used in my family by many members. It's like it's used in every second sentence, it seems. Like anyone you talk to on my little island where I live, the fishermen and the a lot of tradespeople here, and the F bomb just flies. It's like we use it for nouns, adjectives. It's like it's not. It's almost we don't even notice we're saying it. What people are conscientious of here, from a religious perspective, is using JC or GD.
Yeah.
Oh, when I hear those, like I kicked my father out of the house for saying it. He said it three times. He did it on purpose. And I was like, no. After the first time, I said, you can't say that in here, Dad. I was like, you say whatever you want at home, but you can't say that here. Drop all the F-bombs you want, but you can't. And then he said it again. And then I was like, I'm not joking. And he said it again, and I kicked him out.
Yeah, I know. I had somebody drop it on the show there a couple weeks ago, and I talked to him afterwards about it and explained to him that if he ever wants to come on with me again, that he's got to absolutely promise me that that won't happen again. Because I mean, the F-bombs are one thing, but when you start using the Lord's name in vain,
oh,
it's a completely different animal.
Oh. So anyway, I can be in a room. I'll tell you what, I'll be in a room. It doesn't matter where I'm at now. Like, I can be at a Legion. I can be at a bar. I was at a pool tournament last week, and someone dropped a JC, and I stopped, and I said it loud enough. I said, hey, I said, you should reserve that name for your prayers. I said, and if you're using it that loosely, tonight would probably be a good night to start. And then I just kept playing pool. And I'm like that now. I'll call them out publicly. I'm like, listen, would you appreciate it if I used your name when I stubbed my toe? I did that once, eh? Paul Joyce. I did it to my father. I stubbed my toe. I was like, Paul Joyce. He's like, what? I said, what are you doing? I was like, well, I stubbed my toe. He's like, well, yeah, but why did you say my name? I said, well, you say Jesus' name all the time when you stub your toe or something else happens. I was like, so I just said your name. What? You don't like it when I use your name in vain?
I'm going to have to come up to the East Coast one of these days and get a feel for the culture out there, because you're definitely a different animal than us on the West Coast here, Billy. But you know what? I've met some really good people that are East Coasters and Newfie guys, and you know, they just seem to be the greatest people in the world, really. My best friend for years, I don't know where he got to now, but was a Newfie, and he was just a funny guy. You know, always happy, always just a really nice guy to be around.
Well, do you know what's interesting?
Most people from the East Coast I found are like that. They're really easygoing, happy people.
What's interesting, what you're saying there is the community that I live historically is an Acadian community, a French-speaking community. But in the late 50s, I think it was the late 50s, even throughout the 60s and 70s, we had a huge influx of men who came here from Newfoundland because when the commercial fishery started here, we didn't have qualified captains and qualified engineers.
Right.
So a lot of these men came from Newfoundland. So when I was born in 1976, I grew up in a community that was pretty much half Newfoundlander. Like all the Acadian women here married Newfies. I'd say 90% of my father's best friends, like out of his 10 best friends when I was growing up, I'd say 80 to 90% of them, eight or nine of them were Newfoundlanders. So I was influenced.
Breed of people, that's for sure.
We're rough around the edges. We love hard, we play hard, and sometimes we can fight hard.
If necessary, I can imagine a thing that you could do for sure, because I've met some East Coasters and they're pretty hard-nosed people as a rule. Nice people, but hard-nosed.
Like growing up, for example, and I tell this story, and a lot of people are like, you guys did that? And I'm like, yeah. Like I guess when you probably know it too from growing up in BC, but we had hard winters, but it never stopped us from being outside. And when you spend your time outside in minus 20, minus 25 degrees Celsius playing hockey all year, you know, growing up, it toughens you up whether you like it or not. Like, there's just a different, I don't know, there's a different mindset. Like, nothing stopped. Like, we don't mind playing baseball in the rain. We don't mind playing hockey in a snowstorm. It's, I don't know. I can't really, explain. Like, at 13 years old, I had a job cutting, I was baiting long lining trolls. So at 13, I had a chopper. Like, when I say a chopper, I mean the handle on it was probably 3 to 4 inches long, about an inch thick, and it was a chopper. It was literally a giant knife that you use to cut frozen mackerel, and then you take the frozen mackerel pieces and put them on a hook that was like 2 inches long.
Yeah, and set them on a long line.
Yeah, and the faster you could bait that tub, you got paid by the tub. So I remember when I started, I was getting paid $10 a tub. And at first, it took me like an hour and a half to bait that tub because you take some getting used to, right? And then by the time I was done, I was doing them every 45 minutes, and I had gotten a job with a guy that paid $15 a tub. And I did that when 13, 14, 15, and then when I turned 16, I was able to get a social insurance number, and then I got another job. Like, I got a real job.
I was born and raised in Toronto, by the way, Billy.
I
moved out west when I was about 18 or 19. I think it was 19. Somebody said, go west, young man. So I went west. And with the exception of a couple years, I never came back.
So. No, I guess we were steeped in manual labor. Like, even my first job when I turned 16, it was with a youth cooperative. And different jobs would come up, and it was different pay for different jobs. And I remember one summer, a job came up. A guy wanted to build a fence around his yard. He had a big property, and he was too cheap to hire a bulldozer, so he hired our youth cooperative. And we literally dug all the holes for the sonotubes all around his yard with a pick and a shovel all summer.
And that was cheaper than hiring a machine?
Well, you only had to pay a certain portion of the wage because the government covered the other half of the wage because it was a youth cooperative, right?
By the government. When I remember those programs. Actually, I had an apprentice on one of those programs for about 2 years, Billy.
So you know what I mean?
Took advantage of it.
And he got two of us, right? So we were two of us.
Cool. Well, I'm going to have to get out there one day, Billy, for sure. But getting back to the meat of our conversation today, we've only got about 3 minutes left here, Billy, before I'm going to have to let you go. There's so much I didn't even get to talk about today.
Well, get into the Watch the Water. If anyone's out there that hasn't seen that yet with Stu Peters, go watch that.
It's viral.
Well, and I would have liked to have talked about that because I don't think it's in the drinking water. Like, a lot of it, the focus is on the drinking water. I'm not sure what to make of all that, but I do believe the remdesivir and the vaccine and even the virus, because when you see the way that it's behaving and you see how it affects people, when they try to treat it like a regular pneumonia or lung issue, it backfires on them and it does something else. And I think only a select few people know what's actually in it. And that's the scary part of that. And then as far as the Ukraine goes, I'd say go find Patrick Lancaster, because the more we know about the truth in Ukraine, the less the government can lie to us. And then there's a Rumble video out there, some Veterans for Freedom. I don't know how true that is, but apparently there could be something big happening here in the next 8-9 weeks in Canada. Veterans, former police officers, acting duty, like still people, they're claiming that they're going to do something similar to what went on in Ottawa, just that what they're going to do, the government's not going to be able to pull off what they did, because it will literally turn into a civil war, from what I'm understanding. Like, I don't know who it was. Did you see that Rumble video? Now, the only thing that concerned me, and I'll tell that to anyone that goes to watch that video or finds it or whatever else, they're saying to go to a website and register, and that when this all goes down, we'll be notified. And that raised flags for me.
Sounds like tracking. That raised a big red flag for me too, Billy.
Right. I'm like, and our bank accounts will get frozen. So,
exactly.
I'm praying that it's legit. I'm praying that there actually is a group of 5,000, let's say, former service members, either police or military or president, still serving, whatever. If they do what this video claims, it sounds to me like they're going to force pretty much a military tribunal. I don't know if you've ever heard of, actually, you've had him on your show, Doug Force.
Yep, many times.
Okay,
yep.
Well, you know how they've said before that if you can get enough people to sign on to something, they can actually form a legit government and overthrow another government by mass number of signatures that they have?
Yeah.
It sounds almost like something like that they're going to force, but it's going to be military style. And from what I'm understanding is it's going to be, we've got our doctors, they're ready to talk now, you're coming out now to talk. No preparation. If this is all science-based, you're going to be able to defend yourself now. You're going to be held accountable now. And whether you walk free or you go to jail to face whatever sentencing you're going to face, we're going to determine now. That's what I'm understanding.
I'm going to keep an eye on it because I've had quite a few links sent to me on that already. So I'm just kind of sitting back like you, Billy, and trying to find out if it was legit. But the fact they wanted you to register was a red flag to me. Buddy, we're out of time. I got 2 minutes left here to finish up the show. So I'm going to thank you for coming in again. I really enjoy talking with you, Billy, and I'm going to get you back in the very near future here if you'll oblige me.
My pleasure, Barry, and if you're willing to invite me back, I want to apologize again for the F-bomb. I was so proud. Like, the last two shows, I hadn't dropped one.
You didn't. Yeah, I know. I know. You were doing really good. And then you blew it today, but I'm sure they'll forgive you for that. But like I said, lately you've been doing
Easter,
really good.
It's Easter. They got to forgive me. It's Easter.
Mr. Joyce, we'll talk to you again very soon, my friend.
Thanks. God love you, Barry. Love you all, and take care. God bless you.
Bye for now, Billy. Okay, guys. Well, that's another wrap for this week. I hope you guys have enjoyed the conversations. I think there was some pretty neat stuff shared between me and the guest today. I want to thank you for coming in and spending time with us. I will be back next week, same time, same place. You guys all have a blessed week, and bye for now.